On this episode of Podigious.
There was probably only like 5 minutes of actual footage in that episode.
Why do I care about this flower?
Shakuamon.
No.
Ew. Boo.
Duh, of course you have feelings. You are worrying about having feelings. That is a feeling. Like, QED, done.
This ship is real.
I'm gonna need your password. You can use mine to get on the internet.
Podigious.
Welcome to Podigious, episode 207, If I Only Had a Plot.
Adventure 02, episodes 30 to 37.
Maturing, Destiny Stones plotting, Inner Darkness, and Black Wool Greymon.
Recorded January 11th, 2015.
I'm Jeff Ruberg, and I'm joined by Ashley McDonald.
Hello.
And Asher Soffman.
Hey.
Andrew's in Japan this week, so I'm jealous.
He did go to Odaiba, by the way.
He did?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. Right now he's in the mountains.
Mm.
I don't know which mountains, but he's in the mountains somewhere.
Just in a mountain.
Oh, and he got a cold and he almost didn't go into the hot spring because of it. But he did.
Oh, no, not. You can't miss the hot spring episode.
I know, you can't miss the hot spring episode.
This episode of Podigious is brought to you by Destiny Stones. When Destiny doesn't have the stones to tell you, your idea probably should have been scrapped. Because when something's boring the first time, why not repeat 6 more times? Destiny Stones are an important part of a complete breakfast, but should not be consumed on an empty stomach. Nor on a full one. Nor anywhere in between. Destiny Stones. Just don't. So Ashley and I are here late at night with some follow-up since last episode was recorded, and we have to rush through it because it's a long episode. So first off, we have news in the past couple weeks. There's the announcement of Digimon Crusader, which is an iOS and Android game coming to the West, which was in Japan, I think released in 2012, and it was shut off a year ago, so it doesn't really have, I'm not really optimistic about it being a good game if it was shut off in Japan, and it's supposed to be coming out in the West in spring, but I don't know. And we got images in V-Jump for Matt and Yamato and Gabumon for a try, and I don't know, they kind of look like I would expect. Gabumon doesn't look different from the original as Agumon did, so it's kind of not really surprising.
Maybe it just looks like Gabumon.
Yeah. I mean, it looks nice. Yeah. And not much really to talk about. Okay, so on to general follow-up from the last episode, and really the only thing I want to talk about is the sub versus dub debate. And I have some regrets about the way we handled it in the last episode, just that it is a really nuanced topic, and I feel like Ash and I were talking off the cuff a lot, especially me. I feel like I had a lot of points that were fairly complicated that I didn't explain well because I had very loose notes and then tried to explain very strange and convoluted concepts in like a sentence. Didn't come off well. So I feel like I may have done a disservice and people may have gotten the wrong impression. So Adventure Hearts responded to our podcast, and I'll link to all these topics in the show notes if you want further discussion. Adventure Hearts responded, and then Ashley responded to Adventure Hearts on our comment section, and Adventure Hearts replied to Ashley, Ashley replied to Adventure Hearts, I replied to Adventure Hearts. I also had an in-depth reply to Adventure Hearts on Tumblr, going point by point with their response, and then they replied to me, and so you can find those links if you want to see more of the discussion, if you felt like anything we said was offensive, which I don't think it was, but things may have come off more, less nuanced than we intended to.
If you are interested in such a debate and why we take supposed sides, you can read it.
Yeah. So we got some opinions from listeners. Peter, in our comment section, mentioned that he prefers the sub version because it has more drama and richer characterization, less one-note characters. But there was one comment that Peter made that I wanted to take some time to correct. So he said, "It's definitely a matter of taste, but I don't feel my preference for the sub is elitist in any way. The original is just a better overall product to my taste." I just want to clarify that, like, I don't think either of us meant to give the impression that having a preference was elitist or snobbish at all. But I mean, this is a misconception we've seen in a couple of different places replying to the podcast, so I thought it was worth pointing out. But what I found elitist was looking down on people who don't have the same preference. That's not at all what Peter was talking about, and I don't know. It wasn't exactly what Adventure Hearts was mentioning either. It was similar to that notion that if you don't like the sub, you're not a real fan, is the kind of thing that is snobbish or elitist. And John Summers, in our comment section, also mentioned he prefers a sub because he doesn't have constant jokes, and he prefers deeper display of death and fear and suffering. For example, Puppetmon being more psychotic with his gun, and Apocalypse
Mon was good enough.
I'm conflicted about that because I feel like when we discussed Puppetmon, I did a lot of watching of those episodes in Japanese. So it's hard for me to separate what Puppetmon was like in the dub versus the Japanese. So I'm not really sure if I'd just seen the dub what I would have thought. And Apocalypse also has much more depth and motivation in Japanese than in the dub.
I would certainly hope so.
Yeah. So my conclusion of this whole thing is that on the show we mentioned differences in dub and sub a lot. And I feel like maybe that might give a misconception or a false impression that they're similar and that the only differences are the ones we point out. But I mean, there are a lot of differences, and a lot of them are just subtle characterization between, I mean, like, Tai Chi is not Tai, Yamato is not Mad, etc. And that's why if we ever want to cover it, we do it as a separate experience instead of just watching both shows together in parallel. And so, yeah, so I mean, my conclusion is people who are interested and have the time should totally check out both versions. But we shouldn't look down on people or judge fans who aren't interested or don't have time. I mean, that's totally valid life decisions to not be able to spend time researching both versions. And you can still be a dedicated fan without that. So anyway, we forgot to explicitly ask last time for listener opinions. So if you want to share which version you prefer and why, we'd love to hear about it in the comments. So on to specific feedback about episode 206. This is the part where we try to remember what the episode title was. Ooh, we united, we dilly dally shilly shally.
Dilly dally shilly shally.
Which, in case anyone didn't know, is a reference to the Final Fantasy VII Advent Children dub. Which, yeah, we thought it was a little subtle humor to be referencing a silly dub translation.
I don't remember what our thought process was for picking this title, but I was like, oh, we were trying to think of synonyms for meander or something.
Oh,
and then
yeah,
we were like, dilly dally shilly shally.
So first off, I wanted to correct myself. I mentioned, I think last episode, that someone mentioned Astro Super Corner being a thing. I didn't mention who it was, and it was ShawnieMac23, so I want to give him credit for that. And yeah, I mean, it's not something we've been able to do in the episodes we've recorded so far as an explicit thing, but maybe it'll come back for try.
We're gonna do it!
And ShawnieMac23 also mentioned, he had a comment about in the last episodes we watched about Kari cheering on TK during a basketball game in the Stupid Davis episode. And he basically found it odd that they added that chippy dialogue that wasn't in the Japanese version in the dub. And what it made me think about is why dub writers would add a lot of chippy dialogue. And I mean, the conclusion I came to was that I can understand a goal to make subtle things more explicit, to basically anticipate where relationships are going and provide more evidence for it so that viewers aren't, you know, surprised by things, or it makes more sense when they see it kind of reinforced more, which, you know, can also be seen as like beating the viewers over the head with it. But I think it's kind of funny for Digimon because a lot of those relationships were ones that turned out to not be true in the end because of the epilogue. I mean, like Tai and Sora and Tiga and Kari and a little bit of Joe and Mimi, too, were all, you know, reinforced in the dub. And I think, especially given answers we've heard from Jeff Nimoy in the past week, because that's where they thought it was going. And they thought it made sense. And so I think it's funny that in the end, those pairings didn't become canon. And I think in the original Japanese, there was a sense of purposefully, painfully laying down the audience about their favorite couples not becoming true. But the dub reinforced that even more by adding more shippiness.
They were giving you fodder for all your fan fiction.
Yeah. Well, then people would argue that the epilogue basically...
No.
Well, what's the analogy?
No, that's
lit the fodder on fire and burned it all so they couldn't fire it? I don't know.
Yeah, no, the epilogue would just make more fanfiction. Just everything's encouraging your fanfiction.
So Ember Moto had a nice comment in our comment section talking about Ken's time on the Tag Tamers, which we mentioned is kind of like we aren't really sure. Because I had read some about Tag Tamers, but didn't really... The information about Tag Tamers didn't explicitly place it within the Adventure Zero 2 timeline, and the Adventure Zero 2 stuff didn't explicitly place it in the Tag Tamers timeline. So anyway, so he clarified it. So he says that Millenniummon, who's the villain in Tag Tamers, causes the same time dilation from Season 1, so that explains why Ken can be in the digital world for a while without being noticed. And so in the game, Ken uses a Season 1 Digivice. And once he gets infected by a black spore, he stays in the digital world for weeks. Wormmon nurses him back to health in the digital world, which confused me because I read the stuff about Tag Tamers. I assumed he went back to the real world and was nursed back there. But so he stays in the digital world until he's back to health. Then he comes back to the real world, and then he gets reprimanded by Sam in the scene we saw in 02. And then Sam dies, and he clarifies that Sam pushes Ken out of the way, not we were like, we're not really sure what happens. And
never thought Ken pushed him in any way.
I didn't think Ken pushed Sam, but I wasn't sure if they made it clear, if they made it explicit or not, whether Sam pushed Ken out of the way. So, this is, I'm not taking this one person's comment as like supreme evidence that that's true, but I mean, we could just refer back to the thing, but we don't have time. But anyway,
I know I went through it recently and it doesn't, it's not explicit.
Okay. So maybe there are
Japanese.
Right. Maybe there are other canonical materials that mention this, but I mean, yeah, so I'm inclined to think that it's not really clear. And maybe it is in Japanese. But so anyway, Adventure 02 stuff makes it clear that Oikawa contacts Ken after Sam dies. And then Oikawa's contacting Ken is what draws him into the digital world / Dark Ocean, which is when his Digivice comes to D3. So that's all that. And John Somers left a comment about DNA digivolutions. So he basically raised this question to us and said, should Digimon that result from DNA digivolutions be the only way to reach that particular Digimon? I ask this because apparently XVmon can digivolve to Paeldramon and beyond without Stingmon and other continuities, and doesn't that defeat the purpose of the DNA digivolution to begin with? And, I mean, yeah, I'd agree. That defeats the purpose.
Totally defeats the purpose.
Right. I mean, you have to think, like, well, the designs are made of these characters in Digimon, assuming there's a DNA digivolution involved, and if there is, then it doesn't make sense for them to be without that. Or they're not made without them, in which case it doesn't... In which case, or you assume that the design for the DNA digivolved Digimon doesn't incorporate the other Digimon, in which case, then why is it a DNA digivolution in the first place? Yeah, I think it compromises that, and it's a little weird. And, yeah. I mean, it could be... I don't know. There could be an interesting story to tell about that. You know, like, if there are two Digimon that have a particular bond, and one is able to, you know... I'm just speculating off the cuff here, but like, if XVmon and Stingmon, you know, DNA digivolve to Paeldramon, and Stingmon dies, and XVmon, you know, like, in reliving memories of Stingmon, DNA, or digivolves to Ultimate, incorporating the memories of Stingmon or something,
yes, that's what happens.
I'm just saying, there could be an interesting story about to go there, but I mean, that's not, I don't think that's the case that John Somers is mentioning. He's kind of just talking about that, like, I think it's more of a video game continuity.
Yeah.
We just kind of need to do whatever you want to make the story more, make the gameplay more compelling and more linear evolution line. And Cedar Mill pointed out the very important fact in our discussion about Leafmon and his nose, that Leafmon's nose is actually a pacifier, not a little nubby thing, which...
I kind of like, every time I see it, I'm like, it's a pacifier, but then I'm like, but it still doesn't make sense. Right? Like...
I don't know what there isn't to make sense about it.
Well, it's his mouth instead, right?
I mean, it's in his mouth. Is that pacifier?
So it's not his nose.
They go in their mouth. Oh, okay. Then it's not, yeah, so it's not his nose, okay? I mean, the other baby Digimon doesn't have a nose. Like, Chimon doesn't have a nose. Can, like, I mean...
How do they breathe and smell?
How do they poop? How do they eat? You know, I mean...
I don't know. Digimon! What do you mean how they eat? They have mouths.
Well, they eat stuff, as we get to in this episode, they eat stuff that's as big as their bodies. So anyway, so we need to pick the best unanswered question. This is my vote.
No!
So, and now we're getting to the audience chosen unanswered question. And I'm overruling Ashley in this decision for this episode. And... My favorite unanswered question from the audience is from Nate Ellis, and he asked, why is Ashley always confused?
I replied back with Shruggy.
Shruggy emoticon.
Well, okay, in response to our audience ridiculous dialogue draft pick, Shawnee Mac just points out just all the basketball game in what episode, in Davis's episode, in the beginning of it. It's just...
Well, his particular quote was Davis saying...
Guys, we need to learn to pass the ball now. Let's do it.
And what I found was ridiculous about it is that then he then proceeds to not pass the ball. So, yep.
Yep. Davis. Well, that's how he rolls.
Half Davis, half dub writers writing lines about basketball without understanding.
It's true. Apparently the dub writers just, they don't know basketball.
We say apparently because we don't know basketball either, so.
Basketball is not one of my
favorite
sports.
It's not one of my, it is a sport.
Enough big men, like, hitting each other in it for me, I'm more into the football and the hockey.
So anyway, the results of the Ridiculous Dialogue Draft poll, our picks. So number one was the Pewdiepie quote from Ashley of the full of cliches. It's too late for you now. What time is down? You can't turn back time. You may have been a lie in it. I go on, but I can't think of any more cliches. Which.
Boom!
That was a bridge. I mean, I don't feel so bad about you winning with that one because it was what I was going to pick if you hadn't been chosen. If randomness hadn't chosen you before me. So I mean, I basically won too. I basically get credit.
No.
But then the second choice, the second top one was also Ashley's, the today's entree is tuna surprise. There's no tuna, that's a surprise. Which, sure. I can understand you all bad humor. I mean, it's okay. And third choice was mine. There was a tie for third place between me and Ash, which was Ash's line of, this one's confusing. It was V-Mom being like, Gatchaman wouldn't like me more if you could digivolve, and Davis being like, it couldn't hurt, she doesn't like you now. And mine, which was Davis saying, this is why I don't surf the internet. I hate websites, which...
I hate websites. Just the way he said it was weird. Yeah,
that one's the best, and you're all wrong. But so, in terms of overall ranking of the hosts, Ashley was first place with more than half of the total votes. Actually, yeah, more than half the total votes. And then I was second place, and Ash was third place. So at least I wasn't last again. And
destroyed you all.
That's it. We rushed through a mountain of follow-up in about 20 minutes. Jesus, that was 20 minutes.
What a record.
Oh my god, but 20 minutes though. And like I verbally vomited everything. So it was like, not going to condense, not going to cut up pauses or anything. It's going to be like just 20 minutes of me talking.
This is like right now.
I guess. I mean, I was continuing to keep listening because it's being honest with the audience. They can see into our
like
souls.
They like our honesty.
I don't know if they do. Do we even have an audience?
It's true. Eh.
It could just be Digimon. Digimon aren't real.
Yeah, it's just Pixel just listening to us.
He's not even listening to us. He's just walking around his box.
He's very simple-minded. He just wants a box.
Doesn't everyone just want a box, actually?
We pick up after the kids learn that older women are probably giant spiders.
In episode 30, Ultimate Anti-Hero, Arukenimon is tearing her hair out trying to destroy the Digidestined. She concocts a harebrained scheme to summon a fake War Greymon. The kids tell fake War Greymon that Orange is the new black, and he beats them up for their constructive criticism before taking off to spread his fashion sense around the Digiworld.
In episode 31, Opposites Attract, Yoli goes on a menage a trois date with her best friend and crush along the beach of the Dark Ocean. Only same-sex couples fly in this universe, and, besides, Ken already has a hubby, so Yoli and Kari slap each other to create an androgynous bird-cat android who has the best design in this arc.
In episode 32, If I Only Had a Heart, we ponder profound philosophical or maybe medical questions, such as, why do you have a heart? When Agumon can't provide satisfactory answers, Black World Greymon decides his purpose in life is crushing other creatures' hearts. Three Terror Destroyers later, a Destiny Stone is turned to several regular stones.
In episode 33, A Chance Encounter, Yoli and Black War Greymon put on their tourist fanny packs and go on a field trip to Kyoto. A young girl finally gets in a car with two men without dub writers having to invent fake relationships, and a monkey and ninja in Black War Greymon's posse have to be escorted home after getting a little too rowdy.
In episode 34, Destiny in Doubt, Cody sizes up TK as a potential mate before Magna Angemon deus ex machinas his way into the plot to stop their unholy union. Harder, better, faster, stronger Angemon is unable to defeat Black War Greymon in time, even with the most overpowered cheater attack ever, because, duh, we still have 15 episodes left.
In episode 35, Cody takes a stand. Black War Greymon proves not only that he has a heart, but that he's just obeying God's Ten Commandments when he parts the sea to reveal a Destiny Stone. In a last-ditch effort, Cody shields the stone with his body. Black War Greymon is seized suddenly by flowery metaphor and tries to stave off his impending poetry crisis by throwing a Terra Destroyer at Cody. Cody is saved, but the stone isn't.
In episode 36, Stone Soup, Everyone is searching for the last legendary bowl of destiny soup. Mummymon and Arukenimon ruin a Chinese restaurant's perfect rating by leaving a one-star review about the manager being a rotten egg. Luckily, they find a spring of soup to eat for free. Eventually, the kids remember the world's about to end. So TK and Coralie finally tie the knot with a giant angelic clay doll?
In episode 37, Kyoto Dragon, the kids are finally able to inflict damage on Black War Greymon with the help of their new giant angel doll. Azulongmon steps in to tell Stalker War Greymon that they never would have worked out, and then digs some plot holes almost as massive as his beard.
Let's first talk about a favorite episode.
Okay, hands down, Kariolee 10 Dark Ocean episode.
Yeah.
That's mine.
Jeff disagrees. What's yours?
Okay, so that was a close second for me. I mean, I had a lot to like in it, but I'm trying to remember why I chose this over it. So the one I ended up choosing was episode 32, If I Only Had a Heart, the one where Black War Greymon just talks for a while.
Just, I want to protect this flower. Agumon, answer all my existential questions.
That's basically it. And I think if I had to choose something that was more objective, even though that goal doesn't really exist. Anyway, if I had to choose something that was like the best, I wouldn't choose 32. I would choose the Dark Ocean one. But I think this
really?
Had a...
Yeah, plenty to dislike in the Dark Ocean.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, like, I have a soft spot for this episode, even though I don't think it's that good. Especially, like, a lot of these episodes, looking back, I was, like, especially writing recaps for them, I would just be like, what happened? Like, really? It's almost over now? Like, nothing's happened. And
yeah.
It's true, this episode, and... But, I mean, I have a soft spot for the imagery of the flower. Like, for some reason, that has stuck in my memory a lot better than a lot of other stuff from this arc. And I guess I didn't actually like anything that Black War Greymon and Agumon discussed specifically, but it was the idea of them having a conversation I liked better. And a lot of stuff they talked about was like, where's my heart? I don't know.
Is it in my brain?
That was just so... The details of it were silly. The idea of it... When I look back on it, I forget how silly it was, so I have fond memories of it.
Yeah, I just had much more of a emotional resonance with the Kariolee 10 episode.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that I, like, could sympathize with Yoli for in that.
No, I sympathize with Kari.
Oh, jeez. <Yeah. laughs>
We can get into it later.
That says a lot about both of you. I sympathize with Ken.
Oh, well.
No, that's not true. Actually, it's kind of true, but not in that episode particularly. But yeah, that's my favorite episode for probably the very obvious reason of ships. It's just
the
a very shippy episode.
Out of nowhere.
But it's really cute.
Yeah, okay. I mean, they literally had the, like, it's not you, it's me conversation and the I envy you conversation.
It's just, and there's a lot of touching going on in that episode.
Touching.
Did anyone else have a least favorite episode?
I mean, I was just bored with the monotony of, like, and Black War Greymon destroyed another Destiny Stone. Who's surprised? Nobody. Please stop the same strategy of, like, Hyeldramon and Sylphimon are not going to do it. I'm just...
So yeah. Your least favorite episode is every episode.
Every episode. Just, it gets worse as you go along.
Yeah, I didn't have a particular least favorite here. Like, I don't know. There were animation episodes there were episodes where I didn't like the animation.
What do you mean by that?
Well, the beginning of one episode was like the movie animation for 2 minutes.
I know. What was that all about?
And then it changed suddenly.
Oh, yeah. So you mean the first one, right?
Yeah.
Was it the first one? Yeah.
It was the first one.
Because that one... So the episode that I'm going to mention in a second, episode 36, had the stuff, the kind of animation we mentioned a couple times before, which is just like extra lighting and more shadows and stuff.
Yeah.
And that has, like, you know, come up several times, and it's easy to distinguish it because it's like everything basically looks the same. Like the shapes look all the same. It's just like more shadows.
It doesn't quite look the same, actually, to me.
I think it definitely feels very different.
They draw faces differently. They draw faces differently.
I wonder if that's just like the impression we get from it.
And hair has more volume and doesn't look so fake.
I like have not noticed this, but if you think it's true.
Okay, I'll have in the show notes images to compare the two. But yes, but then this movie art style that was in the beginning of episode 30.
Yeah.
I noted it down, but I, like, when I looked at my notes, wrote it off as me being ridiculous because it didn't come up again, and I was like, I might have been making it up.
No, yeah, me too. I was like, wait, did I imagine that? And then, like, the second scene is also that, and I was like, no, I totally see it in the way the humans are drawn. And then, like,
Another minute later, I was like, wait, now it's the same. I'm so confused.
Right. And I couldn't really articulate why, like, what it is about it. Because, I mean, the movie has a lot of distinctive things. Like, there are scenes where there aren't any lines drawn. There are scenes where it's totally different kind colored lines. I can't remember exactly, but when they're in the internet, like the, like, Greymon and those Digimon are fighting, like, their lines are totally, they're not black at all. And it looks really interesting. But that was not, like, the lines were totally normal. There was just something about it that looked like the movies. And particularly, I think, the Hurricane Touchdown movie or Diabormon Strikes Back. Because it didn't really feel like Soda completely.
Yeah, it was like halfway between the normal animation and the movie animation.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I wouldn't be completely surprised if there was like some collaboration done. You know, like, I don't know how the things were staffed for the movie versus the show, but I would not be surprised if there was work done for the first movie, which is set around here roughly. That was showing them destroying control spires after the defeat of Ken, that they decided to take out of the movie to make it more like timeless or something, to make it more detached from the actual arc. And then we're like, well, we have this footage of them destroying control spires, so let's put it somewhere.
Yeah, I just like really didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, it was strange. Oh yeah, so my least favorite episode is the episode 36, which I found odd because like it had the better animation. Usually that corresponds to me liking it better, correlates with that. And it was like in the first half of the episode, before they leave the restaurant, there were 7 evolutions. And
wait, that is totally my least favorite episode. That is true.
It is just, it's also like, I feel like they probably had the better lighting and stuff just because they had more time to, because like they, there was probably only like 5 minutes of actual footage in that episode. Like,
yeah, no, yeah,
it's just that whole episode is like, Jeff and I had difficulties writing a recap for it because we're like, it's already so inherently ridiculous that like we could just straight up write a recap of it, like plot point by plot point, and it would just sound ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm fond of that episode.
But okay, it's one thing to have those 7 evolutions in the first half, but, and then they digivolve again to get to their ultimate forms at the end of the episode, and there is still, there's not a single fight in the episode. There is like,
there's a minor skirmish with Arukenimon and Mamimon in the restaurant.
True. Well, you mean like,
that doesn't bother me.
They just like, they stand off against each other. They don't actually fight. And I think they like might throw an attack or two at, between Arukenimon and Mamimon and Digitamon and Tapirmon, but I can't remember exactly. But there's no like, I don't know, it just reeked of filler.
Yeah, but I love that episode because I can taste that soup in my mouth, okay?
The Chinese soup that's totally not ramen?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you sure you want to taste that soup in your mouth, though?
Yeah, because I'm not an evil Digimon, so it won't hurt me.
Okay, that mechanic, I feel like, was...
Okay, what?
That yeah. mechanic was just like, ugh. It made no sense. They were clearly leaving the restaurant to chase Digitamon and Dipiramon to get the recipe. They were not chasing them because they digivolved or something. Like, and I feel like they just wrote that in to like give it more in the dub. They wrote that in to give it more of an explanation for why they were, I don't know, I don't, why they were running away from the kids. It still doesn't make much sense. Okay, so on to favorite moments. I have a clear favorite moment, and it was when Ken calls his mom to ask about sleeping over at Davis's.
Oh yeah.
And she cries and.
Oh
no. I was so overwrought.
I did not think it was overwrought.
Okay.
Well, I thought her crying about it was overwrought.
Oh, come on.
I just can't take this Ken. He's no fun. He's so... This is the best Ken? No, it's not.
He's totally...
Well, we know what Ashley likes now.
Big Digimon?
I like that he called his mom. I like that.
Yeah.
Ooh, I have a favorite moment. I think Ash already knows what it is. You know what it is, Ash?
There's no Metal Sugimon, so I don't know what it is.
You know what it is!
Do okay. I know what it is? You probably told me, I forgot.
It's when Davis says, dudes, we can't like stand around.
Yeah.
And blah, 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 all these things. Was it the beginning of the last episode? I don't know, somewhere around there. And then Kari says, Davis then says, like, we have to get to the last Destiny Stone before Black War Greymon gets there and, like, loses control of himself. And Kari's like, I'm going to lose my cool if you keep calling me dude.
I liked that also.
Kari, you're my new fave.
Kari's great when, like, I like what the dub does with Kari, personally. I guess my favorite moment, I have a lot. I guess I can't really call episode 31 my favorite moment. It was already my favorite episode. But, okay, in episode 30, when Yoli has just gone to get Ken, and she's like, I'm sorry for slapping you, and Ken just makes this stupid whimper sound.
I'm sorry I slapped you, but you needed to wake up.
Mm-hmm. For 12 years, I have been laughing over that sound he makes.
I think I considered making that like a ridiculous dialogue draft pick, and I'm like, that's not even like a line. It's just like...
It's not, but it's... Yeah. It's just... I'm terrible, but like I have been laughing over... I was waiting for that moment the entire episode. It's the highlight. The highlight.
Oh, yeah. So, okay. On to favorite characters.
What does that mean? Is that like...
Black War Greymon.
Well, so by character, I mean like character design, anything that was like, as opposed to like an event or an episode.
Black War Greymon is the best. I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, Black War Greymon's mine too. Like, even if...
He's so funny.
We have such different reasons. I just have a lot to think about because of him. Not funny at all.
Everything he says in his voice is hilarious.
I don't think anybody really stood out to me in this.
Yeah, there's a lot that doesn't stand out.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's the main arc of seeing Black Pokemon being emo, which is why.
Yeah. Maybe Kari, actually. Mm. Not just because of how she handles herself and the others in episode 31, but because of moments like when she calls Davis out for his dude thing. I don't know. This arc made me think a lot about TK, though.
I wonder why.
I wonder why.
Cody's also been thinking a lot about TK.
Yeah. Yeah. I would be too in that position.
In
that position.
Oh, I didn't mean it that way. Why'd you have to do that?
You fell right into that trap.
I did. Why? No. Cody's 8 and TK's 11.
In bed.
No. No. Stop that.
In bed.
Well, I mean, we already know that I harbor a deep love of TK. So.
In bed?
Yes, in bed. I put him in our bed when you're not there. That's who's there.
Okay, this got weird quick.
No, it didn't.
Anyway, I don't know if I'd call TK my favorite character of this arc, but I've ended, after I finished, I think I'm gonna roleplay him now. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks, Digimon.
Thanks, Digimon.
I think you have no choice in the matter. You're like, it's forced upon me now.
Basically. It's not my fault, clearly. It has nothing to do with me.
It's your destiny.
Oh, don't go there.
Your destiny, Swoop.
Gate of Destiny.
I really liked Arukenimon and Mummymon as a thing. I liked a lot of individual parts of these episodes. They were just, as a whole, completely ridiculous and boring.
Yeah, that's a good way of summarizing.
I can understand that, yeah.
Yes.
A lot of good parts, not tied together well at all.
Yeah, no.
I had a couple general thoughts about the episode. We've talked about how they've all felt really padded, and we couldn't remember what happened in many of the episodes because it just feels like nothing happens. But, I mean, one aspect that I thought was interesting was that there was a lot of focus on non-episodic moments. That usually Digimon episodes are, like, very clearly, like, here is the this episode and this episode and this episode. And it's, like, very iconic set pieces that are explored in depth, so you kind of remember that imagery with it. And these episodes didn't really have that. And especially because, like, the locations they go to, they vary each episode for the Destiny Stones, but they're just, like, there for a couple seconds before they go on to the next one or whatever. They don't really explore them in any way. It's just literally a backdrop. But, I mean, most of the time is devoted to conversations and stuff that are more serialized or, like, about the character arcs over the whole arc, which I thought was ambitious, I guess, but didn't work well.
Yeah, it was like the stuff with the characters felt so genuine, like with TK and Kari and all of them. It's just something about these episodes just kept them from being actually good episodes.
I mean, it's like the things they explored in relationships and conversations that happened. There were many conversations where I was like, finally, this conversation's happening. And like, this conversation makes total sense. And kind of surprised they devoted that much time to this conversation. Like, between Ken and Izzy, they finally got their, like, we're both geniuses moment.
That was a really awkward.
It was totally moment, awkward, though. Yeah.
Though. Like, yeah. What was that? Like, the awkward nerd boner measurement thing. Like, calm down, guys.
I had to, like, one-up each other. What book did you read? Oh, you didn't read that book? All right.
I mean, it wasn't just, like, they're one-upping each other. Like, it was just super awkward the way they did it. Like,
yeah.
And
yeah.
I guess they're supposed to be awkward.
I mean, yeah, they're both awkward. They both have always been awkward.
Yeah.
So when you put two awkward people in the same room, it does not actually get any less awkward.
Yeah. I guess it's easy to assume awkwardness is from the writing, but...
I mean, yeah, I think that's generally what the awkwardness was.
Can we have a little memorial service for Arakenimon and Melimon's car?
No.
I'll miss that car.
Yes. I mean, I don't know where they got that car, but sure.
I mean, I'm pretty sure it doesn't come back again, right? Like, it was destroyed in the last episode?
Yeah, I don't.
Was it destroyed? They abandoned it.
Oh, they abandoned it.
Yeah, but I don't think it comes back. What's the next... I mean, aren't we going into the real world?
Yeah, I don't think they really stay in the digital world for more than just the finale anymore. So, yeah.
Rest in peace, Arakenimon and Mamimon's car.
So, quick, I just want to get this out of the way. The brief return of... Real world geography corner with Kyoto in this arc. And I mean, there's not much. Kyoto is a city in Japan. It's a real place.
Yep. Wow.
Yep. I mean, this was more interesting when we were exploring like the wards of Tokyo, and it was like more exciting than just. Well, so anyway, Kyoto, the name means capital city, which they talked about how it used to be the capital of Japan. But Tokyo means eastern capital, which is why they both have To in them, which is a neat fact. But when I was a kid, I remember just thinking Tokyo and Kyoto, if you just move the To in the front of Tokyo to the end of Kyoto, well, they're actually different characters. The Kyo are two different... No, sorry. The Kyo are the same. Kyo is capital, and for Tokyo, it's the To is east, and for Kyoto, the To is city, I believe.
Oh, you kind of did blow my mind, though. That's good.
I think you knew that. You just forgot from Japanese class.
No, I didn't learn anything in Japanese class. I learned Ryogakse desu ka.
Yeah.
And... Dochira ga ii desu ka?
Yeah, and itenki desu ne. That's about the extent of my Japanese.
Kind of only interested in talking about this if other people have things to say about it, but do we think that Black War Greymon is a racist name?
No.
No? Why not?
Because he is literally black.
Sure, okay. I think that definitely on an individual basis, there's nothing racist about that, but it seems a little problematic to me to, I don't know, to paint evil people as black.
Yes.
Well, yes. There's that.
But they didn't imply that he was black in the sense that we consider black a race.
True.
They're not associating the race with evil. It is a problem pervasively in our culture of associating darker colors with undesirable qualities, but I don't find that in Black War Greymon.
Well, I mean, but he is like, he's War Greymon but black, and the black part is what makes him evil.
Yes. And that is a problem. I don't find the naming of Black War Greymon or making him black inherently racist. I think it's part of, you know, that cultural problem that feeds into racism. I don't find it racist in and of itself.
Yeah, yeah. I phrased it particularly badly by saying, is it racist or not? I think it definitely could have a effect of feeding into it without being it itself. And I think, you know, I'm used to franchises like this in the dubs changing the word black into dark, like in Yu-Gi-Oh! There's a very prominent card in the series, a black magician in Japanese that was changed to dark magician. And I think there are a lot of examples of that I can't think about that out of my head. But I mean, I don't really think that just changing the name really changed anything. I mean, it makes it less immediately offensive, possibly, if it's misinterpreted. But you're still perpetuating the, like, things that look darker are evil or are bad. Which I guess isn't true in Yu-Gi-Oh! Because, I mean, it's like, dark magician is, like, Yugi's favorite card.
Yeah, dark magician is purple.
Also is purple?
And is purple. Yeah,
he is purple.
Is dark magician really purple? I've never realized this.
Dark magician is
you're
purple.
Colorblind. Yes, he's purple.
Wow, totes purple.
Totally purple.
And we get lots of slapping. Yay. So much slapping.
Oh, what was that about? Yes.
So, okay. So we got... I'm going to just recount the instances of physical violence.
Of slaps.
Okay. Oh, I forgot about ones before. Hold on. There's... I can't remember how this plays out. Does... In the early episodes, does the Davis and TK... Davis and TK, who hits whom?
In the early episodes?
Yeah. Davis punches TK, right?
They actually don't come to blows. Davis tries to attack TK, but they kind of stop at the shake each other's clothes portion.
Okay, so I won't mention that.
But someone, Matt punches Ty. Yeah, but
They're not the main people.
Well, it happens.
Sure. But okay, so in recent memory, we had TK punching Ken in episode 19 when yes. Ken was playing with darkness too much, and Davis slaps Ken in episode 26 when...
Wait. You skipped Ken whipping TK in the face.
Oh, yeah.
That happened first. Ken started it.
I consider that like that's what the Digimon Emperor does. He just whips people.
No, he doesn't. That's the only time he does that.
A person.
True. Okay. But that's, I don't know. I feel like that was more like he's a Digimon Emperor. He does bad things, right? Like I'm thinking of instances where it's like characters we like, we agree with, we are sympathizing with their actions.
He's never actually attacked a human being before because he knows human beings are real.
Sure, okay. But it's not, I mean, the theme of this is like characters that are friends who are hitting each other, and they were not friends at that point, definitely.
Okay, then why are you counting TK punching Ken in the face?
Yeah, okay, that's, yeah, sure.
They were not friends.
Double standards.
So the first instance is Davis slapping Ken when Ken is, I don't know, being sacrificial and willing to sacrifice himself to go into the base on his own. Yoli slaps Ken when he won't realize that he's wanted in the group and wants to stay on his own in episode 30. Yes. And then Kari slaps Yoli in episode 31. I can't remember why.
Because Yoli was being hysterical. That's a bad word. Yoli was, she couldn't, like, stop talking herself into a hole, kind of.
She was afraid, like, she didn't think there was any way out and they were going to die down there.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
In the canyon.
Yeah, she was like, I'll never have children and make millions on the stock market.
Okay, I liked the tech stock thing, or not tech stock, the stock market thing, because it's like, but I mean, being like, my life goal is to have kids, I'll never have kids, oh no, that's.
I like that Yoli is very honest about wanting it all.
That's true.
She wants kids and lots of money, and to be famous.
Yeah, Yoli.
She's great.
Yeah, and then later in the episode, Yoli slaps Kari, because Kari thinks she's been weak and can't defend herself, and yeah, it's just a lot of, like, people saying things that aren't the smartest, and the other character, instead of, like, convincing them, just being like, you're just being dumb.
Doesn't Kari slap Ken in that episode, too?
I don't think so.
She doesn't? I felt like someone else slapped Ken in that episode. Maybe not.
He probably slapped himself.
Maybe he'll just slap him again.
Ken was probably like, I have friends, and then himself from the past slapped him and was like, no, you don't. I don't know. It definitely felt like they over-relied on this season a lot.
Yeah, they do.
They do. They're like, we can't think of any other way to resolve conflicts, so...
I mean, and it works the first couple of times, but when it's like basically three times in the course of two episodes, it's like, okay, yeah, we get it. They slap each other.
It's really not good to be... It's not a good lesson for anybody of any age.
They even make Kari slap people. That's not... That's a new low.
Well, because Yoli brought it out of her.
Yeah.
Which is
okay. Which is awful.
I mean, so it made sense in Adventure because it was like Ty and Matt were really the only ones that had this kind of dynamic until, I think at some point, Matt almost gets violent with Izzy at some point. I can't remember when that happens. No, is it Ty gets violent with Izzy? Ty got violent with Izzy. When is this, though?
It's after the split up, the big split up.
Which split up?
You're right. It's after Ty comes back from the real world and finds they're all split up everywhere. Oh, no. I know exactly what episode it's in. It's when Kari's sick.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Izzy's being rational, and Ty's like, no, I can't be rational.
Oh, yeah.
It's in the church, right?
What church?
They're in, like, a church while they're...
No.
They're totally in a church.
I don't think so.
In any case, it's two characters in Adventure that have a fighting tendency, especially with each other, and a little bit with others.
I mean, Ty gets physical. That's what he does.
Right. So these characters out of the blue getting physical seems bizarre.
It's not so bizarre for Yoli, but for, like, Kari, that's weird.
Pretty bizarre.
Yeah.
It's not that weird when you consider that her brother is Ty, but it's kind of weird just for Kari.
She really wanted to live up to Ty.
Yep, she's one step closer to living up to Ty.
God.
Need to hit her fighting quota.
Well, that feels like something I have done in life, actually, like playing on hockey teams. I'm like, I'm going to forsake all these feminine things and embrace, like, yeah, I'm just going to smack you in the face. That'll make it better. No. Gosh.
It's also weird when people will hit Kari. It was weird when Davis slapped Ken, too, because, like, I think season one set me up for, you know, boys going straight for the punch, you know?
Hmm.
But he didn't. Which is good, because a punch would hurt more.
Do we have anything more to say about slapping?
Don't do it, boys and girls. Not a good technique.
Good advice.
I smacked people across the face with hockey sticks. It's not a good thing. It's not good. Don't do it.
I think it's interesting how Yoli episodes, there seems to be this pattern of Yoli being excited to be around people that she admires or really likes. So Mimi before.
We've mentioned this before.
Right. But then like this is another episode where she's with Kari and Ken, who are like her best friend and her crush. And it's...
Which one is which?
Oh!
I wanted to make the joke during the recast and I just didn't have an opportunity.
But yeah, and it's like kind of about how she doesn't get along with them at first. Like, and I thought that was interesting. And by the end, she does get along with Kari a lot better.
That's okay. I feel like it's like, you know, she didn't really... She had a crush on Ken, but of like celebrity TV Ken.
Yeah.
Now she's getting to know the real Ken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't mean the real Ken because real is problematic. The non-celebrity Ken.
He's still a celebrity, though.
She's getting to learn different sides of Ken.
I feel like the word real in that context isn't as problematic because it's clearly like he's putting on an act. He's not putting on an act. If someone admits to putting on an act and not believing in that persona, then I feel like that's not quite as problematic as the whole like, are you a real Digimon?
Okay.
Or are you a real whatever? What's your real name? And blah, blah.
Are you a man or are you a Muppet of a man?
Well, there's no Cody. Both the TKs are real. They're both real.
What?
Oh, Cody. Cody was having like, issues about...
Cody's like, which one's the real TK?
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Both of them, Cody.
The answer is both. The answer is C, both, Cody.
Oh, actually, on that TK note, I was looking at stuff on Tumblr today, and I should have copied this link, but someone was analyzing the differences... This is going all the way back to episode, 19? When TK got in that fight with Ken. And someone was analyzing the differences between TK's speech in the dub and in the sub. And in the sub, apparently, his speech pattern actually noticeably changes even at the word level. And he contracts certain words in a way he doesn't normally. And they were like, this is very strange for TK, but do you know who does talk like this? Matt. And I was like, oh, angry TK is Matt. That's fascinating. Anyway, that's food for thought.
even more fascinating when considering that it's against the Digimon Emperor, and the Digimon Emperor is very much Ken acting like Sam.
Oh, yeah, that's a great point. Ooh, that's delicious.
Scrumptious.
And Kari slapping Yoli is like, Ty, oh.
Oh,
that's a really weird theme of this season that I never noticed before.
Yeah, me neither.
All the siblings are like each other.
Well, maybe not like each other, but that it's like the idea of trying to live and trying to like imitate your older sibling is problematic in this subtle way.
It's kind of poisonous, really. Not always.
Yeah, but never really addressed on the actual like textual level. It's all kind of, you have to dig into it.
Yeah, that's why it's fun to come back to these shows as a grown-up.
Yeah, if we are grown-ups. Debatable.
I am.
Debatable.
What do you want to say about Kari?
Kari.
Is it the best? Is that...
I mean, I really like this moment. It's weird because there's not that much to talk about. It's like, yeah, glad it happened. And there's not really much to discuss about it. But the moment of Kari acknowledging how it's bad that she silently suffers and doesn't really talk about it, but doesn't really express that. And
I liked
it. It was cool that it was the same. It was tied to the Dark Ocean. And I feel like, at least in my headcanon, that, you know, that episode was all about her silently suffering and trying to live up to Ty. And she kind of realizes that, like, she can't just silently, she has to act out and, you know, rebel at least a little bit. And now, once she is back in that kind of situation, she's reminded of those feelings and has that declaration. But, yeah, 2-2. This, the whole 0-2 has been terrible at representing a threat level accurately, or not accurately, consistently, between the dialogue and the actual stuff that is shown. And I feel like this season is the epitome of that, because so much dialogue about how the world's about to end, and just the tone is just so off from that. And some of it's just like they don't really animate the world really getting destroyed, which is okay. Budget reasons, I can kind of understand that. But like, they're just not really acting with much urgency.
What do you mean? Going to get Chinese food when the last Destiny Stone is about to be destroyed is not acting with urgency? I don't understand.
I feel like they maybe at least the dub. I don't know what it's like in the original Japanese, but like they felt like, well, Cody mentions how this is a distraction, so that's acknowledging it. And like, no, you.
Yeah, and then Cody's like, I should chill out more, and I'm like, no, Cody, no, no, you are the only one being right.
Well,
here.
I mean, the Digimon did need to eat.
Well, there are layers on layers of not making sense, because it's like, even if they weren't taking their time, like, they still couldn't defeat Black World Greymon. Like, none of it really, Well, I mean, that's not, I guess once they get all three ultimates, then they actually are able to put a dent in him, which is interesting.
Yeah, that's not normal.
No, and it, as I was taking notes, I was writing down, like, it would be cool if there was something about these three Digimon working together that could tactically be as strong as a Mega or something, and I guess that's kind of what happened, but they didn't really show tactics, it was just, he started getting hurt for the first time.
Yeah. I mean, tactically, it makes sense, because you have a really solid defensive unit in Shikuamon, which is not how you pronounce that, but whatever. I'm sorry, it's clearly Shak-O-Mon, but they're all reversing the U and the O, and I can't reverse it in my head anymore. Anyway, and then you have Paildramon for cover fire, and Sylphimon for an attack that I think seems to have a certain element of effectiveness against viruses. I don't know if I'm making that up, but she, like, hurt Arukenimon pretty decently.
I mean, I think they all have all of whatever that triangle is. All of the vaccine types have an advantage against viruses, so.
Yeah, but, like, also, like, light element from Gatomon / Anjouwoman / Kari is, like, known to be effective against bad Digimon.
But these aren't Digimon. That's especially what they said when Angemon wasn't able to do something to whatever the gray Kuagamon was.
Oh, yeah? That didn't work?
Because it was like, well, his light doesn't matter anymore because it's not a real Digimon. It's just like, psh.
Well, but Black War Greymon has a heart, so is he a real Digimon?
Real Digimon. The reason I wrote polyamory in the notes here was just...
There's a reason?
Just the speculation, like, it's weird that they all assume that these DNA Digivolutions are like a permanent pairing and that's who they're going to be partnered with forever. I mean... I don't really see why they couldn't, you know, develop multiple pairings, but I mean, there are obvious reasons why from a, like, it, there'd be too many things to explore, and there are also 30 potential pairings at that point with the six of them. And, but I wish there at least, like, some narrative reason for, like, these pairings were chosen in particular, instead of it just being, like, I don't know, or, like, a reason for why those, they don't try other pairings, because, I mean, there are other really strong friendships in those groups. I mean, like, Tika and Kari are an obvious one. Ken and Yuli get married eventually. You'd think at some point they'd be like, I wonder if we DNA Digivolve together.
That would be pretty good. That would be so much more interesting. It would be like, today I'm more your friend. Like, there would be so much more...
I feel like it may right? a lot of weird drama, which maybe that's what Tri is going to do by having
right,
them be
but
like...
Right, I would like that drama.
You DNA Digivolve with him yesterday.
Not just no, but not like that, but like, okay, I'm thinking of, okay, I have three friends. We'll call them 1, 2, and 3.
No, those are the real names. They're actually the predecessors to that guy 4 in Divergent.
Yeah, in Divergent. Yeah, and we were like a tight group of four friends. Four girls, but, and it just feels like it would have been real. Like, there are definitely times where I'd be like, I'm not as close right now to friend one as I am to friend 2 and 3, and, I don't know, it's just different times in your life. You're, like, closer to certain people. You don't stop being friends with the other ones necessarily, but, like...
And there are certainly different aspects of one another's personalities that click better. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like... There are different ways these kids fit together.
Yeah, and I think, I guess the show doesn't really do a good job of this, but, like, if I'm only with friend 3, then I'm going to have completely different interactions with them than if we're with friend, if we're both with friend 2 or friend 1 or all 4 together. Like, the show doesn't really do a good job of showing how, like, their personalities change based on who they're talking to. Except maybe Yoli and Davis, because they have funny.
Well... Yoli and Davis together are really funny, but also when Kari and TK are alone, their conversations are very different from when
that's
they're
true.
With the rest
of
the group.
That's true, because they have like...
They have a secret history.
Yeah, they have a secret...
secret history, oh! And actually, Cody, too. When he's one-on-one with someone, he's very different from when he's with the group.
He's not quiet.
Because when he's with the group, he always has to kind of shout to get heard, you know? So he just doesn't bother.
I guess I just feel like Davis doesn't, you know, like, there are certain ones of them that are like, I just have one personality trope and I stick to it no matter who I'm talking to.
Well, there are people like that in real life, too.
I guess. Davis gets cutesy when he's around Kari. I don't know.
Well, Davis, I feel, is different around Ken than he is around the others. Slightly.
He's trying harder to, like, win Ken over a little bit.
Yeah, I feel like that's more of a, he's trying to ease Ken into something.
Maybe, yeah. But he doesn't try that with Cody. I like thinking about how Digimon and Digivolutions represent the kids and how they grow throughout the series. And, you know, in Adventure, in the first season of Adventure, the whole Digivolution shtick was sort of becoming more yourself and becoming a stronger you. Becoming more strongly yourself. Cause, you know, everyone went to, from in training to rookie at the same time to protect each other in a sort of not very personal way. But then, rookie to champion was all about you and your Digimon. And then champion to ultimate was all about you finding that one thing inside of you that made you who you are, sort of. Or whatever the challenges were for people like Matt and Sora who didn't think they embodied their crest. It was still very much their personal story. And then, the Megas were just prophecy crap. Although you can make a case for Ty and Matt showing a great deal both of courage and friendship in agreeing to do this together.
Yeah, and Ty taking Matt's friendship and Matt taking Ty's courage.
Yeah, yeah. You can make a case for it. I mean, you could make also a case for love having, or whatever. You can make a lot of cases for any of the combinations of crests leading to that, but whatever. Then in O2... what we have is Digi Armor, which is sort of, if you want to make a metaphor out of it, it's like trying on the experiences the people who have gone before you have already learned. And it's not as strong as Champion. You're just kind of taking these ideas, using them, applying them to yourself as well as you can, but it's not a perfect fit. With, in TK and Kari's case, when they sort of put on their own experiences in a way that doesn't quite fit the way it used to. It's sort of like in Adventure, they were given these roles that were much too big for them as people. It just sort of worked out for them as concepts, as the concept of pure, innocent children with mysterious powers, especially in Kari's case. And getting the Digi Armor in O2 is sort of a way to address that role, to try it on again in a small dose and get used to it again and come to terms with what it meant when you were a kid versus now when you are a slightly older kid. And I'm glad that's what they started with in this season, because this season is a lot more about learning from one another than season one was. And then you get to Champion. And the Champions, is anyone else, like, really taken with how kind of boring and sensible the evolutions from Rookie to Champion are in this season?
You mean, like, the moments where they get them? Or the actual designs?
The actual designs.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think all three of them are just like, it's that thing but bigger.
Yeah.
I mean, but at some level, I've been like, but haven't we complained before about how when it diverges too much, you're like, well, how did you get from that to something completely different? But now it's like they kept it.
I don't really complain about
making sense, and now we're like, eh.
I mean, you have stuff like Magnemon.
Well, I'm not eh about it. I just have thoughts. I mean, I like the Champion designs of the new kids, Digimon, but it is very much a case of it's this but bigger. And I don't know. Do you guys have thoughts before I get into it?
I mean, I think the way you described Armor Evolutions is a really cool lens of looking at it, which I hadn't really considered before. And I kind of had always thought of them as more like the crests had been passed down. And it always bothered me that way because it was like, ugh, but this is so incomplete. Like, or not incomplete, but like, this doesn't really fit. And
yeah.
But yeah, think of it.
And it's not as powerful.
Yeah. But yeah, think about it in terms of them, like, them trying on things. And like, the fact that it doesn't really fit is kind of, not necessarily the point, but I mean, it's inherent in the fact that they're just, it's a patch, and they're kind of like doing whatever's necessary, and
they're learning from it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's weird because they don't really learn from it every time they do it. It's just like the one time when they get the thing.
Yeah. Well. Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, yeah. I mean, limitations of the medium, kind of.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, thinking of them as like clothing they put on for the situation is, I think, really apt because, I mean, they are more strategic and they're used in certain ways, which, I mean, it makes me really more sad about TK and Kari not having their own way of using that. They just, you know, become themselves in, become lame versions of themselves. And it's lame isn't a great word. That's pretty ableist, but they become like, there's just nothing appealing about Pegasusmon and Nefertimon over Angemon and Angewomon. They're just boring.
Oh, yeah. No.
Oh, yeah, no.
Yeah.
No.
Although it's nice that they still are a pair, and they still have, like, pair moves that only they can use.
But they're, like, the nerf pair. Like, I mean, it's weird, because sometimes they're really not nerf. Like, they can do things that other Digimon, like, would not be able to do. Like, the Golden Noose or whatever can, in some situations, during the Dark Master, during the Digimon Emperor arc, is, like, much more powerful than other stuff they can do. But it's still... Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think, I don't really know a good synonym to use instead of the ableist lame, but it's just so boring and uncool.
It's not impressive.
Yeah, it's not impressive, it's not epic, it's just like, oh, they made a rope and they tied up things with a rope. Good job, guys.
It's a shiny rope.
Ooh, shiny.
Golden.
Yeah. I think there's a funny switch here, because the Season 2 Digimon are legendary, supposedly, and the Season 2 kids are not. They are not prophesied the way that the Season 1 chosen children are.
I'm trying to remember how that was laid out, because I remember Andrew knew more about this at the time, and I didn't really know, so I kind of wrote it off while we were discussing it. But did they say that Hawkmon and Armadillomon were also legendary, or was it just Vemon?
No. They are all three special, because Izzy just said that they are the only ones that can armor Digivolve. Right. So I think they are all legendary. Like, they were all ancient powers that worked in some way. I did not pay much attention to Izzy's speech.
I think the wording may... Because, I mean, Vemon, in the chronology, Vemon was Ryo's partner before the events of Zero Two and, like, saved the world. And stuff. So, I mean, well, I guess not partner. I mean, according to all the games, like, Ryo doesn't really have a partner until it's actually the main villain and stuff. So he's just sparring Digimon. But that, I think that might be why he was referred to as legendary, because it's like, well, he saved the digital world.
Mm-hmm.
But that was, like, in recent memory. So, right, I can't really remember if that was referring to that or to them being ancient things that have been brought back because they have a tie to the Digivolution, which, I don't know, it seems like weird to have this, like, metaphor of clothing they're trying on, but only certain types of special Digimon can try on clothing, but I guess they need a plot reason to have them, and only them be able to do it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, them and Patamon and Gatumon.
Well, they're just special in every regard. They just...
Right, it's true. It's true. But yeah. But I think because the new kids aren't prophesied, right, they're kind of just working off of their what they are, what they're worth, without, you know, Genii types forcing things on them, and maybe that's why their progression to champion just seems so much more logical. I mean, like, design-wise.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to have a stronger sense of who they are in the matrix of the society around them than the Season 1 kids do, where there's often a kind of radical change, like, from Patamon to Angemon, or from Palmon to Togemon, which is more about they're getting a borrowed power because the world needs them. So that's that. And then the exciting part is DNA Digivolution.
Shipping Digivolution.
Because shipping is so important. No. Well, shipping isn't so important, but, well, except to me, but because relationships are their own source of strength, especially as you grow up. Because you can't, as an adult, you have to be able to function in a world with other people. You have to be able to be yourself, but also work with others and to understand who you are in relation to other people. And that's why I just really love the DNA. The fact that the strongest form of Digivolution in this season is the DNA Digivolution. Because when the universe is not providing you magic powers granted from above, you have to find them amongst yourselves.
Yeah, I like that aspect of it, that it's like, it's kind of, you don't, without other magical powers to get you to the ultimate level, like, they're able to just combine themselves and work together to get that way.
Yeah, I really like that. It's grown on me so much more as I got older. And, like, Season 1 doesn't really address this. I mean, they try at the very end when they're like, my hopes are everyone's hopes in the, like, very last episode.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, it's important to be able to form relationships as an adult. And, you know, the season two kids are technically around the same age as the season one kids were in season one.
Mm-hmm.
But they're drawn taller.
Are they really?
And it's very confusing.
Yeah.
They're totally drawn taller. I thought they were older, but they're really not. Like, they're, the bulk of them are 11, and then Yoli is 12, and Cody is 8. Or, if you're going by the dub ages, like, I don't even know, man.
Yeah.
Like, isn't TK supposed to be 8 in season 1? Does he look like Cody?
Yeah.
Like, no. He looks totally smaller than Cody.
Yeah. And, like, even Davis is taller than Ty, and Davis is the shortest of the season 1 kids. Or season 2 kids. So, it's strange because I came into season 2 feeling like the season 2 kids were less mature than the season 1 kids, but I don't think that's true anymore. I think that the season 1 kids are perhaps better warriors than the season 2 kids, but I think the season 2 kids are much more able to form stable relationships and like act as adults would in a peacetime situation.
Hmm.
So you don't regret picking season 2 as your favorite?
No. Season 2 is totally my favorite again. I'm so happy.
He won't regret it until we get the Tamers.
That's what you say. So, like, I don't know. My feeling is that the season 2 kids may not be as personally inspiring, except for Ken, as the season 1 kids. But the team synergy at this point is just so much stronger than it is in season 1. Like, season 1, they all came together sort of around Ty, but they broke up so many times. And they had so many fights, and they had so many disagreements, and they just couldn't quite communicate that the way the season 2 kids can now. Like, you get Davis and Yoli's easy, honest understanding. You get Kari and TK, Kari and TK can practically read each other's minds at this point. except when it counts. You get Davis and Ken, who, you know, shouldn't really have much in common, but somehow understand each other, even though they are very, very, very different people.
Because opposites attract.
Yes, because that.
Magnets taught us that.
You get Yoli and Ken. Like, Yoli's just very gentle towards Ken, in a, you know, subtle way for Yoli. And Ken, like, it's hard to, I mean, I'm looking at it through a lens of knowing that they get married. But, like,
it's really hard to not.
It's really hard to not. And he's so tentative about each of his relationships with these kids. And she just responds so, she and Davis both respond so welcomingly. That's not a word. But, like, and then in the background, you get TK giving Ken a meat bun. And this is, you know, after we have not addressed the fact that Ken whipped him in the face and then he punched the living daylights out of Ken. And they have so much in common and it's never discussed. TK gives him a meat bun, and, like, they just work together so well. And you don't quite get that in season one.
As TK giving Ken a meat bun could be interpreted in some interesting ways.
Well, it has been interpreted in interesting ways. Go look up some fan comics, my friend.
I just feel like the group splitting up, I think, is more to do with the Adventure Kids being in each other's proximity 24/7. And these kids, you know, it's just a pastime. They presumably meet every day.
Mm-hmm.
But something that I want to talk about in a future episode is actually how... Well, anyway, like there's like roughly a week between each episode or more. And it's like we assume that they like meet each day too. But like they go home at night. They don't spend all the time together. So it makes sense that they like keep coming back together and not like, well, we're going to start our own club for these couple weeks.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that the season one kids aren't friends because they're very tight. But like it's not... It's a very different... friendship.
Right, and I think that, I'm not trying to, I guess, make it about the characters, I think it's just the circumstance they're in. The Adventure Zero Two, they're in a circumstance where they can maintain the same connections for longer. It's more healthy in that respect. They don't need to, like, constantly be splintering in order to be able to put up with each other.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Although they do artificially just because they want to have two characters talking, like when like when Cody and TK walked off on their own for, like, no reason aside from they wanted to talk. And whatever.
Yeah,
I was very confused by that episode.
There was a lot to be confused about.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I think also, circling back to, like, your point from a while back about the 0-2 kids, you thought they would be less mature. And I still feel like that in a strategical way, I guess. A lot of decisions they come to are just, like, no, especially when it comes to like conflicts they have with Cody. It's just like they come to ridiculous things and then Cody's like, guys, and they're like, nope, shut up, Cody. And I'm like, you all are just like, really, so, especially with Ken, it even makes even less sense because it's like, okay, I can understand the idea of like, well, I can understand Davis and Yoli together not coming up with the best plan. Actually, no, because Yoli, I can understand Davis on his own coming up with a bad plan. I cannot understand anyone else being involved in this. And yeah, but I guess, yeah. So it's weird that you have these characters and like individually, they all seem pretty smart in different ways. And then together, they're all just like come up with like really stupid decisions. That's kind of where I get the sense of immaturity compared to the Adventure Kids. Because whenever the Adventure Kids had an argument, it was always like all these sides have valid points. I don't really know. There's no clear right answer. Like they all are just working with limited information they have. And it's like, should they cross the ocean or should they not? It's really unclear. I mean, we know they're going to, but like, how would they know? And this, the arguments again to this season are just like, I don't know. Should we defend the thing? I'm not sure. And like, even the whole question doesn't make sense because it's like, they can't actually defend it. Whatever. It's, yeah. Zero to hate.
Haters gonna hate.
I don't mean to like undermine your point by saying.
Yeah, no, they make very, no. They make very poor battle plans. I've never argued that they did. I would never argue that they do.
Hey guys, let's just move the Destiny Stones without our Digimon.
You just point things at it. Yeah. It works.
Yeah. Why did that work? We don't know.
No, as soon as they said it, I was like, you're just going to point your Digivices at it, right? Like, that's going to work too because Digimon. They initially said it, I was like, really? Do you have a plan? You're just like, I'm just going to move this floating stone without my Digimon. Come on.
Like, how hard is it to write like one line that's like, I'm not sure. Let's try doing this because things are reactive or dangerous. Well, let's just try it, guys. Okay. Let's all just hold our hands and like, okay, let's do it. Instead, they're like, let's move it. Let's do it.
No, Davis, they were like, how do we do that? And Davis was like, let's use our D3s. So they should have been like,
you sound ridiculous.
There was definitely some, like,
it shouldn't have been Davis who suggested it.
There was definitely just a lack of questioning when he initially suggested, hey, let's move the stone by ourselves.
Yeah.
Well, it's floating. How heavy can it be?
How are they going to reach it? It doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of my issues with thinking of the Zero Two characters as being less intelligent or less mature, I think ultimately just come down to, like, they're just written poorly. And
yeah.
They're, like, any evidence we have about the individual characters are that they are not that silly or ridiculous or unquestioning or whatever, and they just did not do a good job of characterizing that when they're in a group. So,
yeah.
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 So I think I agree with all your points about their maturity and especially their ability to maintain relationships.
The one exception is Cody, but that makes sense because he's 8. Like, if maturity is being able to sort of compromise on things and come together, the fact that he has trouble with it makes sense because he's the youngest.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he's, you know, he's Cody. He's reserved. It's harder for him. I appreciate that in a character.
Mm-hmm.
So is that why TK and Cody are close? Because TK used to be the youngest and now he's like...
I think that is part of the rationale for that.
They don't really ever like bond over that though.
Yeah, they don't talk about that.
They don't talk about anything.
Cody talks about TK with other people.
Yeah, Cody goes by TK's back to talk about TK.
And then TK doesn't call him out on it. He's just like, oh, that's just Cody.
That's Cody.
Well, he was angry about it at first. He was like, why'd he do that? That's Cody.
Yeah. Well, my personal thought on that, and I brought this up ages ago, is that while TK represents a very, you know, Western Christian goodness, Cody represents a very Japanese Buddhist Shinto moral code.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense to shove them together in a sort of way.
Imperialism.
Woohoo! Also, Shako is a thing. It's a...
Like the doll?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk about it when we do, like, reactions to the Digimon designs.
Okay, all right. Just in case anybody was like, what is this? It makes sense if you think about it in a... What do you get when you mix an earth thingy with an angel sense, kind of.
So I want to talk about Destiny Stones in general and the plotting of power imbalance that is basically the very poor plotting of this arc in general. I mean, the loose structure and situation that it's dealing with is that we have Black World Greymon, who is too strong for the kids to defeat. We have Arukenimon and Maimon, who they could defeat at the point where they get two ultimates, but they don't want to kill them off because, I mean, for plot reasons, they need them to be important later on, and they also don't want to deal with the moral questions of, like, them just, like, killing Digimon right now, right? And Destiny Stones, which I think, I can't remember if there are 7 or 8 of them, and they all need to be destroyed, or almost all of them, and so their attempts to defend them can't actually succeed, and they can't actually win against the thing that's trying to destroy them. So it's a lot of tough restrictions to work around, and actually plotting out what happens with those restrictions in a way that makes the episodes interesting. It's kind of, this whole arc was doomed from the start, I think. And
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's some things like, so before, these are just my airing grievances, but initially in this arc, Arukenimon and Maimon outnumber the kids' ultimates because, I mean, they're two of them, and the kids only have one, and, you know, they could have just, well, when they're in Giga House, the kids had an advantage with, like, using tools of the house to defend themselves. But once they're out of the Giga House, like, Arukenimon and Maimon could have, you know, ambushed them and taken, they could have destroyed them, right? But instead we get montages of Arukenimon being like, oh, why did I lose to the kids? I'm so frustrated. I need some way to beat them. And it's like, you could just attack them now? Like, that would work? I mean, like, I feel like the writers want to have both ways. One, Arukenimon to be frustrated that she couldn't beat the kids, and the kids to be like, oh, we can't beat them. And it's like, well, this isn't how fights work. And so the concept of fighting against this Black Orgamon they can't defeat and doing it over and over again, even though they have no chance of winning each time. There was a particular, because I mean, that could be done if they're like, they're hopeless about it. Like, as they go along, they keep losing hope, and they, you know, like it even could have tied into the whole, like, hope and light or special thing at the end, where it could have been like, but TK held out hope the whole time. It's like, no, they're all just really optimistic the whole time, which is really bizarre. And we get a lot of lines that really piss me off that are like, oh, the one that was particularly egregious was like in the episode with Moses, and Ikakumon is like there with other sea Digimon by the Destiny Stone, and Submarimon shows up, and Ikakumon's like, oh, Submarimon's here, we can't possibly lose now. And it's like, what? This is an armor Digimon, like, what? You have no shot. And it's like, okay, maybe Ikakumon didn't know that much about Black War Greymon, but, like, seriously, you know War Greymon, it's just black of him. Like, there's no chance of that being a reasonable fight.
This was, again, an instance where I was like, what if Submarimon gets hit? And then Cody just dies.
Was Cody in him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cody, oh, really? Was in there. I missed
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And actually, Submarimon was hit, and it was okay, apparently.
Oh, my goodness. Of course, it had to be okay, because we can't deal with Cody drowning.
Well, it was okay, because Black War Greymon split the Red Sea.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I feel like the reason those lines were constantly written throughout this arc is that I'm kind of inferring how kids react to this based on my memory, but I do not remember as a kid actually questioning those lines. You know, like, I feel like kids don't really think about that logic too hard and just get swept up along in it. And it's like, oh, well, Kakumon said they're going to win. Oh, they lost. Oh, no. And it's like, it creates this roller coaster that's like totally artificial and doesn't make any logical sense. And that's kind of just my theory, because I can't really prove or not without finding kids and showing them the show.
That's what our podcast should become. We should find random kids and make them watch Digimon and tell
That's
us their reactions.
Terrible, actually. Let's not do that.
Speaking of which reactions, there was a YouTube video I saw recently, which was someone filmed the reaction of their friend. The friend watched all of, was like, she showed her Digimon, and she watched all of 02, and so she filmed her live reaction to the 02 epilogue. And she's just like, astronaut? Well, okay, I believe this one. What?
Don't spoil it.
But it was pretty funny, because it's like, it's also just really rare that you get someone who is now watching Digimon who hasn't seen any of it before, and like capturing that on film, I feel like, is like such a pure moment.
Oh, God.
I have a link in the show notes to that great video. So more about Destiny Stones in particular. So the trope that came to mind, thinking of Destiny Stones, is something called MacGuffin. Are you guys familiar mm-hmm. with that?
Yes.
Ashley Silent. it's a word that comes up a lot, and
I have heard it. Define it for me.
I don't want to actually read the TV trope's definition, but in loose terms, it's some plot device that people are basically, like, all the characters are seeking it or something, but doesn't the actual characteristics of the plot device don't really matter. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, TV Tropes has in the description this, like, simple test to determine if it's actually MacGuffin or not, because the term is misused a lot. And they say, like, is the thing interchangeable, and does it do anything? And if it does it actually get used? So, like, it should be both interchangeable and not actually do anything to be called MacGuffin. And I mean, like, some classic examples of this the one that sold me the most is like a heist movie. The MacGuffin would be whatever painting they're trying to steal or whatever. Like the actual, unless there's some like, we need this painting because it has the secret code on it. If it's just like, we need money, then the actual attributes of the painting don't really matter. It's just a thing that everyone is focused around to set up everything else. But I think it's especially weird. It's weird because like, there's no clear division line between like things that are important characteristics and things that aren't. So I think in a lot of common definitions, the Destiny Stones wouldn't qualify as MacGuffins because, first of all, they actually are destroyed and they actually do cause destruction when they're destroyed. But it's like, we don't really see the implications of that too much. So I'm like, I kind of consider it not being used. And it's also like the characteristics not being important. Like even an example of a painting in a heist, like the characteristics, like the monetary value of that painting are important. You know, like if it were just any other painting that would, I don't know. I mean, MacGuffins, I feel like it's often used to like write off a thing. Like a lot of people talking about the Infinity Gems in Marvel movies, especially Guardians of the Galaxy, is just a MacGuffin that everyone's searching for. And then people will be like, well, no, it's not a MacGuffin because it actually is used and it does have power. It's like, well, and I feel like it's just a way to write off something is like, it's just a thing people are searching for. And it's not an important element. And I don't know. I think it's not really that important of a detail, but interesting because it's a word that comes up a lot in discussing films. And the other trope that Destiny Stones reminded me of, something that TV Tropes calls cosmic keystones, which, I mean, just the idea of these, like, couple artifacts that hold the fate of the world if they're destroyed. And I think they present a big problem for the show because it's like they need to be destroyed, but also like how do you work that in with them like hopelessly fighting against things that need to be destroyed for the plot to progress? And there are a couple examples in games specifically that it reminded me of that thought about how it could be interesting. Well, okay, so the particular example I'm thinking of, the actual good example of these three, is Golden Sun, and how in Golden Sun
Ash, don't pretend like you got through that game.
I got through the first one and the third one.
Oh, the third one was bad.
But like, I don't remember what I was doing in the second one and I got lost and I don't want to start over.
So I don't really want to like spoil the, so like, it's weird because if you haven't played Golden Sun, you really should play it. And I feel like the plot is one of the biggest aspects of it. So it's like, if my talking about the plot convinces you to play it, that's good. But also, I don't want that to be spoiled. But also, I don't know, it's hard. If you have any inclination to actually play the game, spoilers. If you aren't going to play the game, hopefully this will convince you to play the game. But anyway,
Jeff, this game is 10 years old.
It's more than that, I think.
Yeah, it is more than that. But I don't want to say how old it is. I don't want to think about how old it is.
So the plot of the first game is that there are these four elemental lighthouses that are being lit by an evil force, and if they're all lit, the world will end because it'll unleash all this crazy magical energy. And so you spend the game trying to stop the lighthouse from being lit, and you go to these lighthouses and the enemies are much stronger than you and they defeat you every time, but it still makes it interesting. There's still interesting fights to be had even though you can't win against these guys, which could easily turn into a like you just fight against them and lose and fighting against them and lose. Like I feel like the restriction of a video game makes it so that would never fly like it does in Digimon, because it's like you would never put up with fighting the same unwinnable boss fight 10 times in a row in a video game like they do in the show. And I don't really need to get into Golden Sun 2 does some really interesting twists with that, but yeah, with the actual lighthouses, but just the structure of trying to stop them from being lit, and they are lit. I mean, that in itself is a little bit of a spoiler. But other two examples are Final Fantasy Tactics Advance. The whole plot is basically about destroying, like, the good guys are trying to destroy these crystals that keep the world in balance, which is a pretty cool concept. But it's kind of the opposite of what's happening here. And, Final Fantasy XIII. Final Fantasy XIII is just story. Final Fantasy XIII is, I'll defend Final Fantasy XIII in a lot of regards, but the story is the worst part of it. So terrible. And it basically revolves around, and I don't really feel bad spoiling it because it's a terrible story and you shouldn't want to know what happens. And knowing that it's terrible might actually help you enjoy the game. But it revolves around the main characters deciding to destroy an artifact that destroys their world because the bad guys wanted them to, and they're rebelling by doing the thing the bad guys wanted them to do. It's... That's my tangent about Cosmic Keystones and uses in other media. I mean, the way it's done Golden Sun to make it interesting is by having other characters distracting you while the lighthouses are being lit. And I feel like it's not really... It's kind of explored a little bit in here with Arukenya and Maimon distracting them while Black Wargreymon attacks the Keystone or the Destiny Stone sometimes. But most often or not, it's just them fighting Black Wargreymon and losing. And then I think it would have been more interesting if they had, you know, consistently been fighting things that were a distraction while Black Wargreymon was attacking or something. And it instead been... The conflict for the kids would have instead been like, we need to beat this Digimon we can beat, but do it quickly so we can distract Black Wargreymon instead of like, we need to beat Black Wargreymon. It's like, no, you're not going to be able to do that. It's just... Yeah, it's... It, good plotting involves setting up realistic hurdles for them to get past instead of just constantly hitting the same giant hurdle, which, and then not even noticing that they're hitting the same thing every episode.
Yes, that was the basic frustration of this arc.
Yeah.
Is that it becomes like, I don't know, it's almost like reverse shonen, like normally.
Like they're not getting not getting more powerful each time.
Yeah, like normally you go and you have to fight like very similar things, but you gain stuff as you go along. This is just like they get destroyed every episode. I'm like, ugh.
And it's like that structure, I mean, could do interesting stuff. It could be about their hopelessness and their, you know, fall into despair as they realize there's nothing they can do. But instead it's just, let's keep going, guys. Digital world.
Every time they start thinking despair things, TK's like, no, we will destroy Black War Greymon.
Well, that's what he's for.
Sure. That makes total sense for TK. But like everyone else should be like, no.
Everybody else is like, you're right, TK. We're going to do that.
Yeah. So that's the bulk of my thing. I have just a couple small side notes. I did not remember that Arukenimon didn't plan for the Destiny Stones from the start. That she basically like stumbles on them because Mummymon mentions a rumor about them.
Yeah.
And it's like, I thought this was her plan, but I guess not. I mean, I feel like even once we get explanations for what's going on in 02 and all the stuff that's going on, there are still just so many things that are just explained by happy accidents. Like, we had Black War Greymon, but he couldn't be controlled by us. But we happened to think this other thing that he could do, that he also wants to do, that is exactly what we need to be done, which we hadn't thought of before. And it's like, really? All those things just fell into place exactly like he wanted them to?
Sometimes that happens.
Sometimes. Not about, like, five times in the course of a season. Like,
shh.
Yeah. Let's give these kids armor evolutions. Oh, wait, they happen to have a thing that makes them hold two armor evolutions. Let's give them extra ones that happen to fit the other crests. And just regretting how the Destiny Stones, how everyone seems to have heard of them, but we've never seen them before as viewers.
I was wondering about that. There's seven of them, right?
I believe so. Do you think that has something to do with the other uses of seven?
But, like, I can't not think of, you know, previous significant uses of seven, especially when we know that the crests that were given up helped protect the world, except Kari made eight, so I don't know.
And, like, does Ken's crest not factor into that?
I don't know what Ken's crest has to do with anything. But, I don't know. I was, like, tracking the Destiny Stone's shapes to see if they corresponded to the crests, and they don't at all. Except for the first one, which is a heart.
I miss that.
And the colors don't match up, and some of them look like gems, while some of them look like stones, and like, there isn't any connection besides the number seven, which was attached to a prophecy that ended up being revised to include Kari. Like, I don't know. I want it to be significant, but it's not, I guess.
It, from a writing perspective, makes me... The thing that I'm envious of is how it's done in Harry Potter with the Horcruxes. In that, like, it could have... You know, some of these Destiny Stones could have been previously important locations or things in the digital world. And that would have been, like... That would have lent an air of, like, oh, they thought of this before. I mean, it wouldn't be exactly what you're talking about. I mean,
yeah,
with it actually being significant for the characters. But that was my complaint that, like, yeah, it would have made us think that they planned this.
What I actually wanted was for it to have to do with the Digi-Destined before Season 1.
Ooh, like, maybe they are the Digi-Destined. Maybe they're like the Fates in Final Fantasy X. They just turn into stone.
But there were only five of them.
Yeah. Actually, I'm trying to remember how this... So, I mean, supposedly according to there was a novelization of Adventure that came out in the past year or so. Uh-huh. And that said that those Digi-Destined Digimon were supposed to become the Sovereigns, which I'm wondering what the fifth one is. I guess there actually is a fifth Sovereign that's not really mentioned in 02 at all.
Which ones are the Sovereigns again?
The Azulamon, the Holy Beasts, or the Gods, or whatever.
Oh, yeah, okay. Huh, that would be awesome!
Yeah, it would be nice if they mentioned it, ever.
Well, maybe if there are only four and there isn't a fifth one, then maybe the fifth one died, like Angemon.
I guess there's also speculation that, like, maybe it was the Dark Master supposed to be a Pokemon, which I thought would have been a lot cooler.
Oh, I don't like that as much as the Sovereigns.
But that was before, like, as the novelization was coming out, it was like, there were hints that they were going to be mentioned, and then, yeah.
No. I like them as the Sovereigns.
Oh, really? It would have been so much cooler if they, like, they didn't succeed, or if they grew up and became tainted by the real world or something. And...
Nah, I don't like that as much. Also, the Dark Masters are kind of really random.
Yeah, that's true.
I like the Sovereigns better. Plus, then, Azulongmon being such a quirky old dude, like, that's awesome. Quirky old dude who saved the world once.
still like the theme of the Sovereigns is a little weird. Like, so I mean, the four of them are pretty disparate and separate, but then the fifth one, which isn't really mentioned in 02 at all, is the yellow god of the center. So we have the azure dragon. Oh, no, they're both dragons. There's an azure dragon at the east and a yellow dragon at the center. Why is there a yellow dragon in the center? Like, what? I think it'd be like a combination of the four of them or something, but no, it's just another dragon in the middle.
Dragons are awesome, that's why.
Oh, this kind of fits into this topic, but only slightly. And it just massively pissed me off how Blackwell Greymon is constantly searching for a stronger opponent that he could fight against. And then once he loses the Magna Angemon, he's like, I need a stronger opponent. You're not good enough. You're unworthy. And it's like, you are losing to him. I mean, he ends up like not getting it hit by the attack, because I mean, then he would have died and that would have been a different show. But that was a frustration.
Ashley's topic.
My unenthusiastic, actually, Asher's topic, but he wants me to read it or something.
I didn't want to lead another topic, basically. And I don't actually have notes on this.
I don't have notes either. Let's just go with it. Okay, so the topic is on inner darkness, because these episodes deal a lot with battling your inner demons with Kari and... What was Kari's deal again? Kari just doesn't say what she means, so then that torturous her. Ken has his whole I killed Sam, maybe, darkness going on.
I think it was just trauma from being the Digimon Emperor.
Yeah, well, he has a lot of compounding things now.
Yeah, yeah, he's a lot of things. I don't think he killed Sam.
But he has guilt over his death that led him to be the Digimon Emperor.
Right, he definitely blames himself. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then TK is also dealing with his trauma of losing Angemon a million episodes ago. Episode 8, 9 or whatever of season 1. Is it just those three? Yoli kind of looks up to Kari in a seemingly sort of forced plot device sort of way.
I don't know. I have thoughts about Yoli.
Well,
the thing is, Yoli saw the Dark Ocean in the end. And just because she doesn't have the same kind of quiet self-blaming, everything is my fault sort of deal that Ken and Kari have, doesn't mean that she doesn't have her own set of issues that are dangerous to her in the way that the Dark Ocean represents. Because, you know, she's a kid in a large family, sort of large, who doesn't get a lot of attention and doesn't really have much of her own to claim, which is why she acts out so much a large part of the time. And the fact that Ken and Kari were ignoring her set her off in a way that let her see the Dark Ocean. And it's not like they were in the Dark Ocean's world at that time. They were on the borders between it and the digital world, and she could have just not seen it the way that TK and Davis didn't see it, but she did see it.
That's what I was confused. I was like, why can Yoli see it eventually?
I think that's kind of up for debate. I mean, like, because then, like, why do all the Digimon see it too? I don't think they're emotionally in the same place as their partners necessarily. I don't know if they're necessarily, maybe they're tied to their partners. So that could be a reason. But I mean, what I assumed was going on was just that, you know, initially they were like only slightly in phase. So the people who had been there before were like, well, yeah, we remember this. Like, it's drawing us. And then the people who hadn't were like, we don't know what's going on. And then as it got more in phase, as the whatever weird warp was manifesting itself there more in the Dark Ocean then. But I don't know. I think the show doesn't really present enough evidence either way
I just think that it's important to note that not all depression looks the same if we're going to tie the Dark Ocean into something concrete like that.
Yeah. I think regardless of whether she is pulled into the Dark Ocean because she has darkness in her or not, I think it's still pretty clear that she has darkness in her.
Yeah.
I mean, what I reacted to was her lashing out and like then immediately regretting it as something that like I've definitely experienced in my past, like kind of bottling up issues with friends and then bottling up so much to the point where I find like, oh, I want to say something, and then like, and then I do it, and then I'm like, I immediately regret this because I wasn't, you know, more honest with myself and with others up until that point. They kind of grew into emotions that were not really fair for anyone to be experiencing. And I feel like that's kind of what Yoli does when she's like really mad at them for ignoring her. And it's like, well, they weren't really ignoring her kind of. And yeah, but I might be reading too much into that because of personal experience.
No, I think you're right.
The other characters, I thought it was really interesting how Ken, when Azulongwan is giving them the uplifting speech about like how the Seeds of Light are going to repopulate the Destiny Stones and like everything's happy, Ken is the one who is like, there's still darkness out there, guys. And I think it's representative of how he's still working through his issues and still upset.
Well, there is still a lot of cleanup to do after him.
Yeah, it is his fault.
It is.
Well, but he was controlled.
Yes, but we don't know that yet.
No, didn't our Kenyamon say it?
We like kind of know it.
There are layers. Like we don't know about the dark spores yet, but like,
yeah.
Which is what's weird about the like revelations and grand arc of the season, because it's just like so many different, like, I feel like especially in this arc we got like three different interpretations of backstory. Like we got Izzy saying random stuff that he thought about like how the Digivices manifest themselves. We got Azulamon saying for real how it happened. We got Sora's dad speculating about the origin of the Digimon. It's just like all these theories come together to form that's another reason why our like understanding of Zero Two is just like full of plot holes, because it's like we don't even get a coherent explanation. We just get lots of different people saying different things.
Yeah, I mean, at the end, Arukenimon starts, like, being like, I made you do this in episode 37 or whatever. Yeah. And then I'm like, wait, what? We don't know that.
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
And I don't think it's true in the end.
It's not.
Yeah, it's not?
No, not really. No, I mean,
there's influence, but it's not from Arukenimon.
No.
I mean, there are some aspects of
Digimon.
No. I'm thinking in particular of how Arukenimon, I'm going to get into this in a little bit, but the way Arukenimon keeps saying that he's talking about how Black Orgrimmon is not real and is artificial, that looking at the end of the season, you could be like, that's a plot hole. And it's like, I actually think, spoiler alert, if you want to know more about Arukenimon and haven't seen the show, that the fact that Arukenimon is also not a real Digimon and is artificial, that informs how she is so prejudiced against Black Orgrimmon.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But, I mean, her saying she controlled him, that's just, I don't think they knew what they were going to say later on.
Yeah.
So who else? So we talked about Ken, we talked about Yoli, it's just Kari and TK?
Yeah.
Davis has no inner darkness.
Davis has no inner anything. I love Davis. I love him so much.
That's true. He doesn't have a subconscious thoughts or whatever.
I love how, like, open he is about how dumb he is.
Yeah.
I appreciate him so much as an adult. Did not like him as a kid.
Hmm.
I mean, I don't know. I felt like Kari's thing resonated with me the most, being super introverted and being like, I'm not going to say that I'm angry right now. But then I just like blow up at Jeffrey sometimes. And he's like, I did something really minor that maybe annoyed you, but now you're just blowing up in my face. And like, I don't know why. And like, I don't know.
My memory is so bad, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Just any time that I get, like, super irrationally mad at you and start freaking out, you're like, okay, this clearly has bothered you for a while, and you didn't tell me, and now you're just freaking out at me.
Yeah.
And you should have just told me before. And it's like, yep, that's basically Kari's dilemma, except apparently she never, I don't know, I just didn't understand how she...
She doesn't really blow up.
Yeah, she doesn't have, like, a breaking point. Like, I feel like most people have some sort of point where they just snap.
Like TK does.
Yeah, well, TK definitely does.
But yeah, no, Kari, I think someday she will. She will blow up at somebody. We haven't reached that point yet, but when we do, worlds will burn. Worlds will burn.
Yeah, so I don't know. I just felt like, Kari, I want to know what you think inside. And we just never really get to know what, aside from she feels like she doesn't live up to Ty. I don't know.
That's why I like what the dub does with her snark. I don't think that exists in the song.
Otherwise, yeah.
It's a nice little outlet. Yeah. We can see the inner.
Definitely that, Davis line that we love. It was like, she wasn't in the frame. It was just them walking. I'm sure in Japanese there was no dialogue.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like.
Yeah.
With that scene.
Wait, which scene?
Where she's like, stop calling me dude.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There are so many moments where...
Because that was just in the intro where it was like, here's the shot of the school. Here's them walking up the stairs. Like, I don't think in Japanese there was any... It wasn't like of their faces or anything either. It was just like their torsos walking up the stairs or something. So I don't think there was dialogue there in Japanese. I don't know. I think it's interesting to deal with inner darkness. I mean, they do come out and blatantly say it in the end. Because like, TK is always ranting about it as like some external force you can go like destroy. But then in the end, he's like, yep, as long as there's light, there's going to be darkness. And like, sure, whatever, fine.
He's like, I'd like to destroy it, but I can't. So I'm just going to smile and bear it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, nobody in this show ever calls TK out on his anger thing. Like, they're all aware of it. And nobody talks to him about it. And that bothers me so much. They don't have to fix it, but nobody even...
Yeah. It's weird because, I mean, that is always presented, especially in this arc, as from Cody's point of view, as he's observing and is like, how do I deal with this? I can see how that would be pretty complicated when that's their what they're trying to express, to then have Cody observing that and have other people butting in to be like, hey, TK, you need to stop doing that, or like, something wrong about this. That kind of complicates the narrative of TK, of Cody observing him. But yeah, it shouldn't have been organized that way because it is this really weird, glaring thing that the other people should address him on or should call out.
Yeah, they should call him out on it.
Yeah, like, why does Kari never call him out on that crap?
Well, Kari never calls anybody out on anything.
Kari!
If Kari did, I think they would have a very good conversation about it because she knows what he's been through. She was there, except for the Demimon thing. But she's been through similar experiences. Like, she, Wizardmon sacrificed himself in front of her, and obviously she, Wizardmon is not her Digimon, but like...
Yeah, but like, saved her and her Digimon, and was her Digimon's best friend.
Yeah. Well,
I feel like I've kind of struggled, I guess I always thought it was silly that TK still thinks about Patamon this way, because like, I mean, that happened so early on, you had so many more adventures with Patamon after that.
I don't know why Patamon never calls him out.
Oh, that's...
Yeah.
That too.
Yeah.
But yeah, it seems weird that this was still bothered TK so much. But then I thought about it as like, from the perspective, like what happens to TK after Patamon, after they leave the digital world at the end of season one, like at that point, TK has now lost Patamon and it would totally make sense for him to have nightmares about Devimon still and to kind of like associate the two together because it's like, then like that would be what sticks with him instead of the adventures.
Yeah, and he doesn't have Matt's support, constant support anymore because he's just back with his mom.
Yeah.
And it's pretty clear that the way that the kids have dealt with everything from season one since season one by not talking about it ever to anybody besides themselves. Their parents don't bring it up. Their parents don't seem to think about the digital world very much anymore, except for Izzy's mom asking about Tentomon, because Izzy's mom knows what's up.
Yeah. Well, and Sora talks a lot about what happened to her dad.
That's true, and that's also very strange, because her dad didn't seem to exist in season one.
Yeah, that is really bizarre. Because it's like, they also say that he's been working in Kyoto for only a year. Just like, why not just say 4 years to explain why you weren't in the first season? Like, this isn't that hard. And I was like, okay, maybe the dub messed it up. And it's like, no, I watched that scene in both. And yeah, he in both versions, is a professor at a Tokyo university and has been in Kyoto for a year or a year and a half or something, but not enough to explain not being there in adventure. But I think in the dub, they explained that he was going around traveling the world looking for weird stuff.
Yeah, they did say that.
But
I wish TK learned a consistent lesson, is basically.
I wish, yeah, I agree, but he didn't.
Yeah, I felt like his turning of like, well, there's always going to be like darkness if there's light was super out of the blue. And
it was, yeah.
It's such a cliche, though, like, we should defeat all darkness. No, there will always be darkness. Like,
he's very happy about it. He's always going to have something to be angry about.
But when he said it, I was like, wait, did you just say this, TK? Did you? You just said this. I'm so mad.
Are you just pounding your microphone, Ashley?
I pound the table.
I really wish someone called him out on it. And it really should have been Patamon or Matt or Ty.
Right? Like, there are plenty of people.
Everybody knows what TK went through.
Everybody should just be calling him out on this crap.
But nobody ever does. Like, even Ken could.
Yeah. But they're all just like, you're right, TK. You're totally right.
Wouldn't that be interesting to have Ken call him out for the way that he's acting reminds Ken of the way he acted?
Right. Yeah. Right? Like, that's basically
that it. It's pretty much the same. Ugh. Except without as much whips and stuff.
Emotional whips.
Yeah, not as much whipping.
So, Black Wargreymon, he's an interesting character, and Ashley and I both said he was our favorite character in this arc. And I mean, this is the, we get more stuff with him later on, but as I recall, this is really the meat of his existential questions and what really defines him. And the rest of it is kind of, I think he goes away for a couple episodes and then comes back and is kind of, his arc's tied up in a bow.
But he's going to a place where people disappear.
He also makes a really dramatic exit. And he's like, you guys, I'm leaving y'all. Screw you.
Peace out.
Yep. There are some aspects of it that are really silly and some lines he has that are really silly, but the basic premise of his plight is pretty cool. And it's basically that, you know, like, what does someone with tons of skill and no ambition do? That's not the situation that everyone's in. Most people have ambition and no skill, but it's still like, I think everyone can experience not really knowing what their calling is and to feel like they can do things, but like, what do they do? And it's definitely something we've never seen. It's definitely something we have not seen in Digimon, because I mean, every Digimon they fought against has had, basically every Digimon in the Digiworld has had a strong ambition or something they want to do, whether it's take over the Digiworld and they're an evil Digimon or protect something and they're a good Digimon. And this is the first time we had someone who's like, I don't know what my ambition is. Especially get that out of a villain is pretty interesting. There are a lot of things I'll complain about Zero Two, but having complex villains is not one of them. And yeah.
Woo, Zero Two, you did one thing right.
one thing right three times over the whole season, so that's pretty impressive.
Three things right. Ooh.
Well, yeah. And so, I mean, I've kind of like just the whole arc kept trying to just dissect Black Orgrimmon. And so he has this focus on destruction. And I think part of that has to do with the fact that he, as soon as he's born, I mean, he's born to be a vessel of destruction. But in addition to that being Arakenimon and Momimon's intent in creating him, that is how the Digidestined treat him. You know, I can't remember exact order of events of how that episode plays out. But as I recall, he's born and they just go to attack him and they... He might attack first and cripple and like shoot them out of the sky, because I remember there was being something about some of the kids flying ahead and being attacked right away. But I mean, the first thing they do is they decide to attack, because you know, he's a control spider Digimon, he's evil, we destroy it. And it's like, well, how do you react when like you're brought into the world and the first thing you do is defend yourself? And like the kids only engage with him on that level, and I think that's especially interesting contrasting with Agumon, who when he runs across Agumon in the wild, they get into a weird existential discussion. And when he runs across the kids, they're just like, we need to take him down. And it's weird how the kids only engage him on the level.
There was a moment where Black Orgrimmon is like, if you won't answer my questions, then I'll just destroy you in your filthy digital world. And I'm like, yeah, why don't you? You're not listening to him. Like, right. Why?
He's clearly like, I want to discuss philosophy. And they're just like, let's attack.
I'm going to destroy you.
It's especially bizarre since they can't defeat him. So you think they'd start to be like, let's listen to what he has to say for once. And it's super weird that they can't beat him and yet they keep trying to beat him instead of just listening to what he has to say. And then once, like, that's eventually what Azulamon does. He kind of, you know, is like, you've been such an idiot, but also answers his questions, you know. And they're not like crazy insightful things that only a god could know. They're just like, duh, of course you have feelings. Like, and
yeah, I mean, his basic, he's like, you have to figure it out for yourself and you're real, like, go forth, my son.
I feel like even Agumon's discussion with him like wasn't super helpful, because he was like, I don't know if you have feelings. If you had friends, you'd have feelings. And he's like, I don't want to have friends. And it's like, you could just say you are worrying about having feelings. That is a feeling. Like,
well,
QED done.
Agumon's not that smart.
True. Where's his heart? I don't know.
Is it in your head? Is it something you eat?
Yeah. And I think it's really cool how this big tough guy, and the thing that makes him break down into an emo mess, is that he gets validation.
Yeah.
Like that Azulamon tells him that it doesn't matter that he's artificial, whatever that means. It's like, you are just like any other Digimon. It doesn't matter what the circumstances of your birth are. And he's like, well, shit. Like, So the whole thing about having no feelings, I was trying to remember, the obvious thing that makes me think of, especially this arc in particular, of having no feelings and then being told, well, of course you have feelings, it reminds me of, I guess, spoiler for Kingdom Hearts. I'll explain why. And in Kingdom Hearts 2 in particular, you have this organization of nobodies, which are entities without hearts, and that is supposed to make them have no feelings, and everyone keeps saying that nobodies just act like they have feelings. They don't really have feelings. And yet we see many nobodies who very clearly act very strongly they have feelings. And they kind of, it's like, oh, they're just acting. They're just pretending to trick you. And it's like, you know, you follow several nobodies and like follow their lives. And it's like, they seem pretty real. And also, what does it matter if they're acting or not? Like the effect, the net effect is the same thing. So like, as soon as Kingdom Hearts 2 came out, I was like, this is bogus. Of course they have feelings. And it's really unsettling how the narrative denies that. Like the protagonists of the game kind of like insult them on, or like, you are nothing because you don't have feelings, and like ruthlessly kills them without worrying about the consequences. And it turns out it's not really matter in the end because they get returned to human form, but whatever. And because it's just like, you don't have feelings. And I'm like, no, they totally do. You're missing the point. And then like four games later, they then check him out and they were like, yeah, that was all a lie. You totally had feelings. And I was like, yeah, duh. Which is kind of this arc of Black Rock Game On, but taking place over six episodes instead of like 6 years of video games. But I mean, I remember talking to Ashley about that, my frustration with Kingdom Hearts recently, and I can't remember what it was about. So I'm like, I know there's some other thing that made me think of this, and I can't remember what it was. So if you can remember, listeners, what it was that seems very similar to this, people being told they have no feelings and then be like, no, they do, they totally do. I'd love to know. And I mean, in that regard of being, it's interesting how Black Rock Game On like totally believes that, you know, like he rejects everyone else and their fighting ability and stuff. But then if they tell him he has no feelings, he's like, yeah, I don't. I'm nothing and stuff. It's weird that that's what he accepts. Also, Arcanimon and Meliamon are basically abusive parents.
Yeah.
Which, as I mentioned before, is especially relevant considering they themselves are artificial, and the way that they're perpetuating the same thing against themselves, kind of. It's a destructive cycle. The whole flower thing, I mean, I remember that flower thing like stuck with me a lot as a kid. I don't really know why, because it's okay. It's basically like him realizing that something that is puny, and the one thing he cares about at that point is fighting ability, and he's like, well, this thing that has no fighting ability has life. I have all the fighting ability and no life. How can that be? And it turns out because he does have life. That's not a stretch. But and he also realizes the powers and everything and la la la. But it's still, I guess I give it props for being an iconic moment that is easily memorable and half cool, half weird, how the distinction between orders and purpose, and kind of one of Black Rock Game On's defining characteristics is he will not take orders from Arcanimon and Meliamon.
They don't have enough badges.
Yeah, that's it. Wow, Ash.
I'm just saying.
But yeah, so he won't take orders, but also the one thing he wants is a purpose. And especially even after this arc, like after he's found out that he has feelings and he gets quite a bit more emo, he's still searching for a purpose. And, you know, if he just went along with them, following his orders would be his purpose. That, like, many people in life just follow orders and that becomes their purpose. And that's, like, totally a legitimate thing. So I thought it was kind of strange to portray those two sides of the same coin and not really make the connection.
He asks such hard philosophical questions.
Well, I mean, so some of them are hard and some of them are just like, no, why are you worrying about this? Stop worrying about this. It's cool, dude. But especially with orders and stuff, it's interesting how the 0-2 kids never really got orders this season. You know, like Jenna gave the Adventure Kids orders as soon as they beat, actually, I guess Leomon tells them the prophecy, and that's kind of orders even before they fight Devimon. And in this season, they don't really get prophecies or orders until Azulongmon. They get the older kids kind of guiding them, but they're kind of in that together. And Azulongmon is the first time they really get like a godlike entity telling them, here's what you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And another problem with the way that people respond to Black Rock Game On's questions is that he doesn't have the same sense of morality that we're used to. And it's a lot of like, I just kept wondering, why does he want to destroy the Destiny Stones? And it comes down to like, so the trope for this on TV tropes is omnicidal maniac, for just someone who wants to just destroy the whole world and doesn't care about what's going to happen to anything. And usually it makes no sense. It's just like easy to paint a villain that way. And I feel like for Black Rock Game On, it actually makes a lot more sense than in most cases, because he doesn't have a sense of morality. He's just been born. He literally doesn't know right from wrong, doesn't know like what it means to feel pain. He can't get hurt. And he gets a reaction when he does this stuff. So it's like, it gets him, not so much attention, but like it shows that he's doing something by destroying this. He's affecting the world in a way that he can't otherwise. And he gets satisfaction from it in a way that destroying Digimon, which is super easy to him, he doesn't get. And, you know, people keep reasoning him with like, people keep arguing with him saying like, don't you know you're going to destroy the world? And he's like, okay, but why do I care? And no one answers that because they're just like, they can't comprehend someone having a different sense of morality. And it's really only when Azulongmon tells him that he has feelings and it doesn't matter that he was artificial that he starts to learn a sense of morality.
I just feel like he doesn't have a sense of morality. He's like, I sense this huge Digimon is waiting beyond these Destiny Stones for me to fight, and all these puny Digimon keep trying to fight me and they suck. And it's just like, he doesn't have a sense of morality because all these kids are automatically like, we must kill you, you're not real.
Yeah.
You want to destroy the destiny. Like, it's a cyclic cycle of he's like, I'm going to destroy those destiny stones because you don't answer my questions or, like, treat me as a real thing. And they're like, well, we're going to destroy you because you want to destroy the destiny stones. And it's like,
If the kids are representative of the digital world, why would he want to defend that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like, their impression he's left with them is that there's this thing they don't understand. It is new. It looks evil. Let's kill it. And they don't actually want to kill it, because, I mean, that gets... But to Blackboard Gamer's perspective, it seems like they want to kill him, right? Like, he doesn't really know that they have this whole, we don't know if we can hurt him thing.
Right, and Kari is often like, he just needs a friend. And then just nobody acknowledges that comment. It just goes off into the ether of audience heard you say it, and nobody else gives a crap. Mm-hmm. Well, there is... Yoli is in that episode with Yoli. Kari does say that sentiment, and then Yoli's like, are you serious, Kari? Are you being for real right now? Like,
UFO shizzle? Bizzle?
Yeah. And then it goes off into nobody cares anymore.
Yeah. Like, it didn't really feel like she actually had that motivation and kept with it later on. I feel like it was a one-off line.
Well, then she did say it again in one of the last two episodes. But, like, yeah, oh, okay. It doesn't feel like she held that conviction that hard.
So, reactions. So, first Digimon we meet is Black War Greymon. He's pretty cool.
Yeah, we like Black War Greymon.
Yeah. I mean, his design is basically just reskinned Greymon.
Why do I care about this flower?
I actually wonder if they, like, were able to reuse, like, assets from the first season or something. Like, all the attack animations, just, like, recolor them or something. I don't really know the animation process enough to know if they could just take the line drawings and apply new colors,
sure,
or something.
I'm pretty sure they could do that.
Hmm. Convenient. Blossomon. Meh.
Nah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, another female Digimon who...
Oh, what was Blossomon female?
I'm pretty sure they said she.
I missed that.
Asher, do you remember?
I do not remember.
I don't remember, like, anything about Blossomon aside from the design.
Well, let me look at my notes. Maybe I wrote something. Probably not, because I never write anything useful.
I mean, did Blossomon talk also? I don't think it did.
I think in the Digi Analyzer they said she, because I wrote down a note that says Blossomon ... is, of course, a female Digimon.
Then probably, yeah. I'm not surprised. I just don't remember.
Digimon Wiki has all the analyzers, so maybe it'll say.
Or, like, Aru Kenimon said she. Like, there was some gendered pronoun that was thrown in at some point.
Yeah, yeah. So, the digital analyzer for Blossomon says, that's Blossomon, an ultimate Digimon. Her spiral flower attack is a good excuse for weed killer, and her children are worse than thorns.
Ah, yes.
So even, like, a mother thing in there.
Yeah, that's...
But,
boo, minus points.
Why is that boo? I mean,
I'm just tired of, like, all the flower Digimon are the only ones who get to be female. And spiders. Spiders and flowers.
We've had flower Digimon that are male, and so it's
have
not
we?
Like, I'm Florimon?
No, they're no. female.
Okay, I'm thinking the other one. The one that's with Florimon.
Another one.
The one with, like, the bush.
Bush. Okay, that one's a dude, but he's also a bird.
Mm. A bird with a plant on it.
Yeah, it's not a flower Digimon.
I find it much more offensive when we have Lady Devimon, who it's like...
Oh, yeah.
It's like her defining characteristic is that she is just girl.
That she is the girl derivative of Devimon, yes.
Which, I mean, I find less problematic for Angewomon, because it's like, Angewomon, they seem more like equals.
Except Angewomon is an ultimate.
Angewomon is an ultimate, and Angewomon is champion.
Actually, Lady Devimon is also an ultimate, while Devimon is a champion.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really find that aspect of it problematic, because I don't think they're... I think if anything, it shows that the woman is more powerful in that pairing.
Well, it should, except it doesn't, because then it means that Angemon has two more evolutions that make him more powerful, and she only has one.
I guess so, but I mean, I don't know. I think it's stretched, because, I mean, in the end, they have, like, Seraphimon and Ophanimon are our peers at mega level.
Yeah, yeah, true, but Gatomon does not... Kari's Gatomon does not evolve into...
Well, yeah, it's all... Yeah. Neither does Patamon evolve into anything in the canon if you ignore the movie, and yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's what I meant. I was talking about the movie.
Right. I don't even like Magnadramon anyway.
I like Magnadramon.
Psh. But yeah, I mean, I think Blossomon, the reason I don't dislike her as much as other female Digimon, it's not like, what has bothered me about female Digimon villains in the past, the very few we've gotten of them, is that especially with Lady Devimon, it's like her defining characteristic is that she's female. And this Blossom one is just like, it's an evil Digimon. Oh, and she happened to be female. Like, we didn't even know that she was. We didn't remember that.
I remember.
But I mean,
actually remembered.
That's, it's something that, like, I wanted there to be more Digimon in the world that are just female, and it's not really brought up that they're female. It's just like flavor text and
Dokukumon.
Well, that was part of the weird spiders are female kind of thing, but
it's true.
And I mean, so is the flower thing, but yeah, it's not the best.
Why are all the main Digimon, like, I would say that Arukenimon and Lady Devimon are the only ones who are, like, super big threats that are female Digimon, and they both take, like, humanish forms. To have boobs!
Even evil Digimon who are female must look at least somewhat attractive. Even though Arukenimon doesn't really. She is often portrayed in objectifying lights, with Mummymon always all over her, for instance. Mm. And also, like, why is she in a bathtub all the time? Like, what's with that?
That was just once, and that was weird.
Okay, it was, like, once, but it was a very...
Yeah, we have gone 6 minutes on two Digimon, so we need to go through the rest of them. So Sylphimon, I think we all agree Sylphimon's pretty cool.
Yeah.
The design's a little, like, bizarre.
No.
Well, like, why is have these, like, weird machine parts and a visor?
Why
and...
not? Why does Pyogremon have guns?
I don't know.
Take that, atheists.
Okay.
You guys don't get Tumblr memes.
Nope. There's Perurumon, I think is the name of Hawkmon's baby form.
Yes.
It's just... Eh, it's a baby. It's okay. Cute.
Yeah.
Nightmon.
He's no knight in shining armor.
I mean, Nightmon is part of a series of Digimon that are based on chess things, right?
I don't think
there's
so.
There's a series of Digimon based on chess things?
There are in Sabers.
Yes, there are. And I don't think he's part of them.
Oh.
I'm not sure. Because he doesn't look like a chess piece.
Yeah.
Nope.
I think it would be Chess Nightmon if he was a part of that series.
Chess.
No, there's Night Chessmon.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah. Oh, of course.
Yep. And of course, all the chess Digimon come in white and black flavors.
Yeah.
Anyway, then we got Eightmon, whatever.
Eightmon's cool.
Yeah.
I like him better than Gorillamon.
Oh, I like Gorillamon because of the arm. He's like Mega Man. Samus.
He has a goofy face.
I thought his accent was a little offensive, but...
Oh, what was the accent?
It just sounded stereotypically like African person trying to speak English.
Yeah. Musiamon.
Eh.
Musiamon. Oh, yeah.
It's kind of forgettable.
Yeah. I was like, wait, which one is that?
Yeah, it's kind of weird because it's like, oh yeah, there was a ninja there, wasn't there? Huh.
Yeah.
No, sorry, not ninja. Samurai. I got the show.
You messed it up.
Did it on purpose. It tried to confuse me. Dolphimon.
No,
they're okay.
Why do, like, I feel like that was such a weird thing to be introduced in that episode. It's like, do we really need to have a...
Yeah, they don't do anything, do they?
No.
Also, they're not on Digital Mickey. Is it Dolphinmon?
No.
It was Dolphimon, right?
Yeah.
Digital Mickey says, like, Dolphimon is a fan page. I mean, this means it hasn't been edited or something? I don't know. Is it, like, Dolphomon?
No.
It's, like, Dolphi. Does, like, no one care about Digimon so much?
Oh, it says Dolphmon.
Oh, Dolphmon. Okay, that's weird. Chris one said Dolphimon.
I don't remember. They're so insignificant.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, and we got Tapirmon.
I like Tapir.
He was weird.
It's weird how he's not, like, used at all to his origin or name in this. Like, he's supposed to be a thing that eats nightmares or dreams?
Yeah,
dream-eating beast in Japanese mythology.
Yeah.
And that does come back, I think, in Frontier?
Yes.
Yeah, but he's a waiter for some reason?
Why not? Why does, I forgot his name, Digitamamon own a restaurant, always.
I like how Digimon, like, they made it seem like he's, like, a prolific chef who, like, had lots of restaurants. And it's like, this is a Digimon restaurant, was one of the lines. And I was like, really? Shakuamon.
No.
Ew. Boo.
No.
So disappointing.
I like thinking about why he's disappointing. Because it's like, we have this precedent of TK being the last card that's pulled out of the deck. And he's always, like, the strongest one. It's always the coolest thing.
That's why TK is secretly the best.
Secretly?
Except for this. Because, I mean...
Well, he's still the strongest of them.
Well, he's the most... He has the best defensive capabilities.
Yeah.
Well, TK always has cheater overpowered moves.
I think Sylphimon might be...
Sylphimon is pretty cool.
Also, we're going to talk about like what the Shakuaman is influenced by, the clay dolls.
Yeah, clay dolls.
Yeah.
And they're, you were saying they're like a mix of...
Well, they're not really. They're...
But they're like earthy and angelic.
Well, yeah.
Earthy and religious.
Yeah. Well, I mean, both TK and Cody have a religious thing going on. And if you're going to combine a digging dinosaur armadillo thing with an angel, like, this works out. It's made of clay, and it has a religious purpose and a protective purpose.
Well, it works out. It works out in a, like, we're trying to stretch ourselves to be like, why does this make any sense?
Yeah.
The other ones are all like, the other ones are all like, you took this one, you put it on this one. I guess Sylphimon is a totally different kind of shape than Gatchaman and Aquilamon, but you get the gist. In this one, you have to think about it quite a lot.
Yeah. At least I finally have an answer after, what, 15 years?
The thing I found out, I forget where I saw this, but the eyes on these statues, which the Wikipedia article calls them dogu, these figurines. Okay, so it says, so this is a, the particular kind of dogu that Shakuaman is based on is the Shakoki dogu, and the name comes from the resemblance of their eyes to a Inuit snow goggle, which I'll have this Wikipedia article in the links, but it's basically like the weird eyes they have are like a type of goggles that would apparently be used to prevent snow blindness.
Yeah, I found out also on the wiki page that most of those are thought to be female figures.
Does look like the eye, it does look particularly feminine, like the lips, Shakuaman.
I don't know about that, but, like, that's what the wiki page said.
For Dogu, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Another distinguishing feature of the objects are the exaggerated feminine buttocks.
Oh, my God. You laughed at that?
Yeah?
Buttocks?
What should I even laugh at?
That's what you laughed at. You're 12.
And Azulongmon. Azulongmon's pretty cool.
Yeah, he's okay.
Sayuri's cool, yeah.
Stop going by the Shuji names.
They're just the real names, they're not just the Shigiyugi names.
Okay, so now we're done with Digimon reactions, and so reactions that I gathered. I guess you guys didn't gather reactions this time, right?
No.
I figured. I'm like halfway through, I was like, oh crap, I need to do this. I forgot to do it before. So I mentioned this to Ashley in real life, but Ash, did you notice... In episode 31, when...
Which one's that?
It's the Dark Ocean one. And okay. Stingmon is reading Blossomon's Digianalyzer, but Stingmon is missing his normal voice. Like, he's missing the... They actually do say Stingmon.
Stingmon!
And so you could tell the way Ashley said that, she, like, didn't really do the weird voice mod, whatever. She did it at the end of the word and not really the beginning. And this Digianalyzer didn't do that at all. And
I didn't notice.
But the same voice actor also did Leomon, so it sounds like Leomon's reading it.
Sylphimon is the DNA Digivolve form of Gatomon and Aquilamon. Sylphimon's static force is the ultimate weapon against darkness and hate.
I really didn't notice.
I didn't notice either.
But you did when I pointed out, you were like, oh yeah, it sounded like it was someone else.
I think I was just like, I noticed Stingmon does his thing less overall, and came off as weird.
Oh, you totally, offline, you were like, oh yeah, I totally agree, that was weird. Now you're like, nope, Jeff, you're a weirdo.
Well, I didn't notice it when it happened. That's still a true, like...
Okay, so now I have a GIF. I need to find the GIF. So this is a GIF of Mummymon transforming from his Digimon form to his human form.
That's a pretty cool transformation.
Yeah, especially for, like, the budget of the show, it's just...
It's taking forever for me.
Are you seeing, like, frame by frame?
Yeah.
It's interesting seeing it in more detail that way, though.
He's it's pretty wrapping cool. up.
Anyway, Mummymon is clearly a magical girl.
Ooh, yeah. I like to see that magical girl anime with mummies. You just what?
I just don't understand why these two get to have human forms.
Because you will find out. Stop worrying about it.
Just the fact that she's going to find out is a spoiler.
I guess.
I'm going to find out.
There's a reason.
What? There's a lot of reasons in Digimon.
So this next gif is when TK is in bed with Patamon. I forget which episode it is.
Oh, God. Yes, I remember this. It's so cute. So cute!
it's episode 34. TK just pokes Patamon and
Yeah, he did. He, like, had a nightmare and was like, oh my god, no, he's gonna die. And then he, like, woke up and, oh, Patamon's right there.
He woke up and rolled over and just like, aw.
Yeah.
It's how I imagine. It's like, Jeff and I do that to Pixel. We just, like, poke him, but then he makes a noise like, don't touch me.
Well, he makes a noise and, like, springs up and is like, what should we do?
Yeah. No, only the second time you touch him. First time, he'll just make a noise. Second time, he's like, stop it.
So the last one, I already showed to Ashley, so a little bit of spoiling the surprise.
This TK one is still, like, loading.
Oh, yeah, it is for me, too.
It's so cute.
There we go, now it's done.
This one's just an image, not a GIF. And it's when like, TK is talking about the light, or the darkness not being conquered or whatever, and just look at Salomon in this picture. Kari's holding Salomon, and Salomon just, like, looks so weird and elongated. It's just, like...
Whatever.
It looks so creepy.
Looks pretty creepy. I imagine this TK thing is, like, what PETA does in The Hunger Games when he wakes up from a nightmare of, like, Katniss dying. And then he's like, I rolled over and Katniss is right there, yay!
Is that a headcanon or is that actually mentioned?
No, that's mentioned.
No, it's
in
a headcanon.
Okay.
It's a headcanon.
Because, like,
no. PETA doesn't poke around the cheek because she'd flip back and stab
PETA
him.
PETA doesn't poke around the cheek, but it's actually a thing that he's like, I have nightmares of you dying, and then I wake up and see that you're right next to me and I'm fine.
This is so new to me. I have so many unanswered questions.
Cody, the place isn't new to me anymore. The place isn't new to us anymore, and we still don't know. So many unanswered questions.
It's true. The place has always not been new to us, right? Like, from the beginning of the season, and there were still always unanswered questions.
Destiny Stones. Why? Where? How?
So, okay, I can understand Destiny Stones being a thing that's, like, part of the digital world. It's, like, you know, a necessary vulnerability in the structure of the digital world.
But... Why did they never talk about it before?
Yeah.
Why did Jen and I never tell us about it?
Because they weren't in threat. I mean, they weren't really... whatever. It doesn't make sense. I was going to say, like, they weren't really in threat. Because, like, Myotismon wanted to take over the world. No one really wanted to destroy the digital world. And the Dark Masters wanted to reform it. So maybe they didn't really need to touch those. But they should have been around. Like, you can't just introduce these things that can destroy the whole world and just be like, yeah, they're always here. Whatever.
Well, that's kind of how the digital world is.
It's true. Yeah. There was, like, one shot, I think it was while in the Dark Ocean episode, when Arcanine and Maimon were watching the Kenyoli Kari being in the Dark Ocean when they were on top of a cliff or whatever, and they were, like, driving mm-hmm. through a road that had, like, control spires lining the whole road. And I was like, why does this exist? It's like trees alongside a road, but control spires. And yeah, Exumon has an attack called V-Laser in which he shoots out a giant X, not a V, from his chest. And yeah, should be X-Laser.
So what computer program does the swirly color metaphor for digital world and real world coming together thing?
Could have been Paint.
How do you
I don't think Paint has does Paint have a swirl tool? It could have been, I have programs like that.
So Microsoft Paint in Japan actually has a multi-universe simulation mode where you draw things and then it actually simulates what happens to them if the Destiny Stones are destroyed in one of them. Yeah.
Ah.
It's a unique feature, and only in Japan.
Of course. There was a moment where, I guess it's when Black Horgrimmon is talking to Agumon. He says, I will be your friend to determine whether or not my heart exists. But if it doesn't, I will be forced to destroy you. And I'm just like, why? What logic is this?
Black Horgrimmon logic. Yeah. It makes perfect sense to me.
I think it was like a threat. It's like, if you betrayed me by telling me something that was wrong... destroy you.
I just didn't think of it as a threat. It was like, we can be friends.
Or I'll destroy you.
Yeah.
Why didn't the Sovereigns do anything to stop the control spires from being erected? Supposedly they were back in their full form.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Yeah, good point. They were too busy playing Fushigi Yugi.
They had to be summoned. They needed some celestial warriors to be sacrificed.
Too busy playing old people games.
Playing bingo.
Bridge. Yeah.
Also, on a similar note, why was Azulangmon freed once they destroyed Destiny Stones?
I don't think he was freed so much as they were given a glimpse of him. He wasn't freed until they de-3'd the Destiny Stone.
And I guess that could have broken the bond that was the control spires restricting him or something, I guess.
Formed a rainbow bridge.
Yeah, I guess we did see the Destiny Stone having power, like it gave Magna Angemon ability to come into existence. So
yeah.
Okay, I have a very serious last question.
Okay,
it's pretty serious. How do baby Digimon eat pork buns that are as big as they are?
They have big mouths.
Yeah, they do.
But they should double in size.
I don't know, man.
We don't question this too hard.
Mm. The show probably expects you to question the plot holes as hard as you question the pork buns.
RDD. Where we go around and each pick our
No, you didn't say Ridiculous Dialogue Draft. You said RDD.
RDD? You don't know what that means? All right, Ridiculous Dialogue Draft, where we go around and each pick our top three funniest, most ridiculous, and most touching lines from the episodes. Please choose a winner on our site, and please have it not be Jeffrey. That's the only aid. I don't care if it's me or Asher. It just has to not be Jeffrey.
Thanks.
Yep, you're welcome. All right.
This one is from episode 37. It's Azulongmon, and he says...
Yes, Izzy is quite intelligent. In fact, without that intelligence, he'd be, well, he'd be Thai.
I was like, ah! Oh!
I was like, that seems like very extreme.
Yeah, it seems like a bit reductionist
right?
of their characters.
Too. A little bit, but at the same time, I'm like, oh my god.
All right, I'll stay in episode 37, because Azulongmon is a funny.
He said a lot of really good things.
Funny dragon god. I guess this is when he first appears, and he's like...
Black War Greymon! Oh, you ask more questions than Cody does.
So I actually recorded the soundbite of, I can't remember what he said exactly, but he said something in response to that, like, you just need to answer that yourself or something, that I was, like, going to play back for unanswered questions if it came up, but, okay, so mine's also in episode 37, so it's, when Azulongmon's about to leave, Davis says,
we'll keep one eye on the Digi-world and one eye on our world, and we'll keep the other eye on each other.
And then Azulongmon replies,
You must be Davis. Well, despite him, I wish you all good luck in your quest.
You must be Davis.
I felt like the jokes were very lackluster in these 8 episodes.
I feel like they were there, they just weren't very...
Yeah, they weren't funny.
...good out of context.
Yeah, there was something missing about them.
Yeah.
That and I wasn't really paying attention.
That helps.
Well, I was paying attention, but I wasn't, like, writing things down, because I was writing them by hand. Okay, this one's actually not necessarily a funny one, but I want to give it an honorable mention. From episode 31, they've just done their light, or their DNA digivolution thing, I think, and there's this light coming down from him wherever, and Kari's like,
it's beautiful!
And Yoli's like,
just like you!
Whoa! You went there!
So we should...
This ship is real!
We should modify the Ridiculous Dialogue description to be like, funny, poignant, extremely shippy.
Extremely shippy, yes.
I would never stop.
That was so, like, I don't know.
That episode was super, super shippy. And, like, not even just in a Kari Yoli way. We get some Kari Ken moments. Like, what's that about?
You get the TK being very, like, I almost lost you again line.
I know, right? I mean, I like thinking about that not just in a shippy sense, but also in a, like, Kari and TK come from the same place kind of way.
I can't help but all these ships now, I just think of Korra and Avatar, Last Airbender. Like,
I mean,
obviously Yoli and Kari is the obvious comparison of Korra and Asami, but like with the Kari and Ken, I thought of, I can't remember her name now, Katara and Zuko from Avatar's Airbender as being this like, that could be an alternative. I mean, Zuko is very Ken.
No.
Come on.
Even when Zuko has his heel face turn, he is it's not the same as Ken's.
Yeah, I like Zuko better. I like Ken a decent amount, but actually, I don't know. I couldn't, if I had to choose between Ken and Zuko, it'd be hard.
They're different.
Yeah, they're different. Okay, it's Ashley's turn, right?
Yes.
My turn. What shall I pick? I will go. I feel like this summarizes the ridiculousness of episode 36 pretty well, and Mummymon falls into the spring of soup.
I wrote this one too, I think.
Destiny Stone comes out and he like is hanging on to the rim thing or whatever, and he's like,
either this is a Destiny Stone or it's a giant monster ball!
Yeah, I wrote this down. No way I couldn't, you know?
Well, I feel like, Ashley, you don't get to say these things. You don't get to say oive.
I don't get to directly quote Mummy Mon.
Nope.
Too bad. I already did. Mummy Mon doesn't get to say these things. You should go yell at Mummy Mon.
Yeah. Okay. So this... It's kind of hard to, maybe I'll, like, before publishing the episode, make a GIF of it or something, because it's kind of hard without the visual and how it changes. But, so, it's when they're in the Dark Ocean, and Blossomon is about to, like, manifest into the Dark Ocean from the digital world. And so it's just an eye appears at first, and then Gatomon says,
"I think Big Brother is watching us."
And then the rest of it appears, and it's a flower, and Akamon's like,
"Or at least it's Corsage."
And
how I missed that.
I mean, at first I thought it was funny, like, as the Big Brother thing, because I was like, wow, people did talk about Big Brother a lot in 1999 or 2000, and it's, like, ironic how it's come back around to actually being much more relevant in the past year. But then I was like, oh yeah, and the Corsage thing, that was pretty good too.
All right,
so my last one's from episode 32. I don't remember what episode that was. Oh yeah, okay.
They're all the same episode.
I guess Ankylomon just jumped on top of Black War Greymon, I guess. I don't remember who they were fighting, honestly. And he's, like, stomping up and down on Black War Greymon, and he's like,
"It's not so much fun when you're on the bottom!"
I was like,
Oh, yeah. It was super dirty.
Anyway.
I just don't think Ankylomon and Black War Greymon would work together.
All right.
don't say things like that. When you say something like that, that means it exists somewhere on the internet.
Yeah.
You're the one who picked it as a quote.
I didn't say anything about it.
He just laughed endlessly. All right, my quote will be also from episode 32, when Agumon and Black War Greymon are talking. I feel like it might be slightly offensive, but I'll go with it anyway. Now I lost it in my notes. Oh, here we go. Agumon's like,
"What if? Always with the what ifs. What if my aunt had a mustache? She'd be my uncle."
Black War Greymon's like,
"She would? Your logic confuses me."
Black War Greymon is funny.
Oh, Agumon logic. My quote is from episode 36, the Chinatown episode or whatever. And
how do they know what Chinatown?
Anyway.
Go on.
Gonna ignore that unanswered question that leaked into this segment. So it's when Mamimon is trying to figure out what the recipe is of the soup from Digitalmon or Tapirmon? Tapirmon. Anyway, so Mamimon says,
"Tell me, my good mom, what is this tasty soup made of?"
"Lots of noodles."
"Well, I know that. What else?"
"Even more noodles."
And I thought it was funny.
You would like that.
I want to get the hashtag even more noodles trending.
Even more noodles.
I would like even more noodles.
I'm not sure what the hashtag would be, but it would work in the hashtag.
I'm just going to tweet that. Just nothing else.
Even more noodles. Come on, guys. Make that trending.
You can find the show notes for this episode at patagist.com/207. That's where you should go to vote on the Ridiculous Dialogue Draft, submit your own unanswered questions and Ridiculous Dialogue Draft picks, leave feedback in the comments section, read everyone else's cool comments, or find extensive notes on everything we've mentioned on the show. Follow us on Twitter, Tumblr, and Facebook. We put out lots of extra stuff on social media, and it's not just announcing new episodes, so don't miss out. You can also send us feedback on social media or in the discussion threads on With the Will and the Digimon subreddit. I'm Jeff and LeJeff on Twitter, Ashley's AshMcD00 on Twitter, and Asher's AsherDashery on Tumblr. The only way to show you're a real Digimon with a heart like Black War Greymon is to leave us an iTunes review letting us know what you think about the podcast, which you could do in the iTunes app on a computer or from the podcast's app on any iOS device. Join us next time as we discuss the World Tour arc in episodes 38 through 42 on Patagist, Campion 02 Places at Once. Bye!
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 And remember, never stop Digivolving.
Maturing, Destiny Stones plotting.
Why are you pronouncing maturing?
Maturing.
No, pronounce it normal.
Mature audiences.
It's nothing maturing test.
Maturing Destiny Stones.
No.
What's Digimon podcast? I'm Ashley. That's me.
Well, now Pixel. Mature.
No, he's still going. You're still going. You're not even.
So Yuli and Kari slap each other to create an androgynous bird cat android who has the best design in this arc.
Who added the best design part?
Me.
It's true though. I agree.
Right? Like.
In episode 33, A Chance Encounter, Yuli and Blackboard Greymon put on their tourist fanny packs and go on a field trip to Kyoto. A young girl finally gets in a car with two men without. okay, start over. Put my serious face on.
You have
put
one?
Your serious face on for this
I
podcast?
I do not have one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Blackboard Greymon proves not only that he has a heart, but that he's just obeying God's Ten Commandments when he parts the sea to reveal a Destiny Stone. Wait, they get the Ten Commandments at the other side of the sea.
I don't care.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a, what's it called? Anachronism. Anyway.
This whole story, what did the, whatever.
Why did Davis know who Moses was? He's Japanese.
That could be, I could understand that being a thing.
No.
They understand. I mean, they've probably seen Exodus, the movie. So many mentions of Terror Destroyer. Why do we need to mention the name of the attack?
Terror Destroyer.
I like it.
Okay, I'll try to say it epically. Okay.
Terror Destroyer.
Exactly. The Fushigi one was better. I'm gonna put it out there.
Not everybody knows what Fushigi Yugi is.
Not even knows how to pronounce.
Yeah.
Ashley. Fushigi Yugi.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm looking this up now because I'm like, I'm going to be really salty. Speaking of salty, I heard people on a podcast using the word salty just to mean like if they were sad.
Oh, like
I'm salty. I'm salty that I didn't get this thing or something.
Wrong. Those people. Are
even
wrong.
I know that's not right.
Yeah.
I smacked people across the face with hockey sticks. It's not a good thing. It's not good. Don't do it.
Ashley, your arc is kind of like Ken.
My arc is kind of like Ken.
A little bit. Like
my arc is kind of like Ken.
The way you slap people then with the hockey equipment was like Ken whipping people, and
it's more like Ty.
But.
Are you saying I was super evil?
Yeah, a little bit.
I'm not sure that's true.
Your past self scares me.
Okay.
You dated that past self.
No, like your past self from like several years before we started dating.
Oh.
Not like last month.
Yeah.
But you guys have been together a long time, just so you know. Just in case you weren't aware.
Yeah, but I got in street fights before I met Jeffrey. I mean, it's fine.
Okay.
I've actually gotten a street fight once.
Guys, don't be Ashley.
Don't be me. Don't do it. Not good.
Poor moral lessons for our children.
I ended up crying a lot. See, that's not fun, right? You don't want to cry. Yeah, don't do it.
If we're grown-ups. Debatable.
I am.
Debatable.
I'm going to be half the age of my mom in like a week and a half, so I think that makes me a grown-up. Yeah.
Jeff can be a baby if he wants, whatever.
Trying to do this math. I'll be half the age of my mom in 19 years.
What?
Really?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No, that doesn't make any sense.
I mean, so you'll be half the age of your parent when you are the age they were when you were born.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And my mom was 43.
Is that always true? Yes, that's always true.
Yeah. I mean, because then you'll be 1X old and they'll be 2X old. So anyway, yeah.
Math.
Well, I mean, Jeffrey.
I mean, my mom basically skipped a. My parents both kind of. My mom's whole line, like my mom's mom and her mom and so on, always had kids when they were 21. And then she had me when she was 43. So I could have been a grandchild of her at that age. So
wow.
My mom had me when she was 25. So there's a big difference.
I'm in the middle here. Blackboard Greymon has a heart. So is he a real Digimon?
Real Digimon. Oh, that's a good. That should be a title. Like, instead of Are Real Monsters, ugh, we call Digimon.
I was listening to some of our episodes earlier, season
God.
Two episodes.
Oh God. Season two or season
do
one?
Do you know how much, season two, do you know how much we say, ugh?
Oh, really?
We say it a lot. Yeah, a lot. Mm.
More than I say weird or interesting?
No.
That takes the cake.
Yeah, by far.
Because, like, I can hear, like, the cars going by, but it's not the same, like, this doesn't sound like something's going in and out, right? It's just like constant noise. And I hear like it's ringing, and I'm like, why do I hear it ringing? It's been crazy.
Do you have tinnitus?
Tinnitus?
I think it's actually pronounced tinnitus.
No.
Neither of you are doctors.
No, but I think I went to the doctor for it, and they said tinnitus.
That's like saying Titus is pronounced Titus.
I know, I was very confused.
Well, that's how I pronounced his name for a while.
You,
well, that is
you,
actual, right?
No, no.
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 Tinnitus.
In the Kingdom Hearts canon.
Tinnitus. Excuse you. Tinnitus is how it's pronounced. Oh, wait. There are multiple pronunciations.
But you weren't joking?
No, I'm looking it up right now. Tinnitus or tinnitus.
So we can both be right.
Yes.
Except neither of them was the one you said, Ashley.
Whatever.
You said tinnitus.
Whatever. Words. They're so difficult.
Well, you know they don't have any meaning, by the way.
Yes.
Yep. Go story, bro.
Oh, yeah.
Ashley, what are you eating?
Pretzels.
I mean, it's fine to eat stuff, but, like, the noise of opening and stuff is...
Hello, cat.
I can actually hear
pretzels?
Your pretzels.
What pretzels do we have?
The salted caramel pretzel that Pixel just jumped on me. Stop! What are you doing? No, you can't have any salted caramel pretzels.
Ashley, we're not getting sponsored by Nature Box. You don't have to do an ad for them.
God.
Salted caramel pretzels.
You're gonna fall down. You're gonna fall down.
The cat
go.
Will chase you to get them.
Pixel just slid like, off the table. He's a good guy.
Bye, Pixel.
B-dubs-G.
Is that really what you're gonna call him?
B-dubs-G.
No, not. I really like this gif.
I think you mean gif.
I think you mean shut up. Next time on Poddigious, in episodes 38 to 42, the kids finally cash in on their frequent filer.